Tomorrow is the last day that you can vote in the California recall election to remove Gavin Newsom and maybe get someone else. Maybe it's Larry Elder. Maybe it's one of these other Democrats that are running. And there are many. There's a couple stories that are popping up and some statements from former President Trump that are causing alarm. In one story from KTLA, people are saying that they went to go vote, but were told they already voted and would have to cast provisional ballots. Well, they're pretty upset about this. Another video is going viral where someone's filming as they're being told, I'm sorry, it says you already voted, and people are getting very upset about this. Well, it doesn't help then when Donald Trump comes out and says the whole thing's rigged. And I'll tell you why. It's demoralizing. And it's not demoralizing the left. They're laughing. They're calling Republicans and people on the right stupid. They're saying that they're dumb and they're suppressing their own votes. And you know what? This kind of rhetoric demoralizes people. So I'll say right off the bat, you got to take this stuff. You got to push it off to the side. Don't ignore it completely. You know, we should figure out why these mistakes or whatever happened. Maybe there's some malintent we don't know. But at the very least, do not let it demoralize you and make sure whatever you believe and whatever you want to do, you go out and you vote. You tell your friends to do it. You go talk to friends, family, knock on doors, and don't let the news stop you from engaging in your civic duties. So we're going to talk about all this stuff. Boy, we got a lot of news. Apparently, the U.S. government's not going to give like something what was like $64 million to Afghanistan, the Taliban. And that'll be really, I don't know, awful. So we'll get into that. We are being joined today by Dan Holloway of Drinkin' Bros.
Nice to be here, yeah.
You want to just introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, I'm Dan Holloway of Drinkin' Bros.
Nice.
That was easy. Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to drink some water while you're
I knew you were trying to stall, so I was trying to
stall.
Just give you the business. No, it's good to be here. I agree with you, though. If voting is that important to get that upset about, and I think the presumption is that that's correct, right? We all think that voting is important.
Absolutely.
Then it's important to continue to push through, regardless of what you think may be happening. You know what I mean? There's nothing you can do about it now. The courts may be able to decide something like that later. I mean, who knows, right? Like you said, it could be the errors happen all the time.
Let's imagine it's just one error in one small precinct for five people, and that could demoralize how many thousands of people. Mm. So don't let that stuff demoralize you, man.
We were talking about it before the show. Some of the rhetoric from the last campaign certainly had a huge effect on voter turnout, right? You would think.
In Georgia, they think.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll get into all this stuff. Yeah. I think we agree on that stuff. We got Ian chilling.
Oh, thank you very much, Tim. Happy to be here. Dan, great to see you, man.
Yeah. Good to be here.
I'm also in the corner pushing the buttons. I'm back from my vacation, getting my sister married in Chicago, and I did not get shot, so I was very pleased with that. I'm happy.
What part of Chicago, though, right?
It was in a nice part of Chicago. Chicago proper.
Yeah, depending on where you are, there's pockets.
Are you a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan, I guess you could say, right?
I don't know.
Cubbies, am I going to get hurt for saying that out loud?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I lived on the north side for a few years, so it's hard not to love the Cubs. It was when Moises Alou was
in Sox town, but me and my friends, we didn't really care all that much.
Right.
Yeah. You know. And don't forget to go to timcast.com, become a member, because we're going to have that members-only segment coming up after the show, and you'll not want to miss it. We always swear. We swear a lot. We say naughty words, you know, because YouTube's mean to us. But this is where we can have a lot of those conversations that typically in the news cycle, it's harder to get through. So again, go there. You'll be supporting our journalists and become a member as well. And don't forget to like this video, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Let's get to this first story here, KTLA. We got to break this one down. This is a worrying story. They say San Fernando Valley residents cast provisional ballots due to equipment issue. They say some San Fernando Valley voters think they are being wrongly prevented from casting a ballot in the upcoming gubernatorial recall election, but the county elections office said it was an equipment issue that was resolved. Okay, so there's good news, right? Mm-hmm. At El Camino Real Charter High School in Woodland Hills, some voters say they were told the computers showed them as already having voted, even though they had not. West Hills resident Estelle Bender, 88, said she was far from the only person who was being told incorrectly that they had already voted. Now, for those that aren't familiar with what's going on, this is the recall election. Governor Gavin Newsom could be removed. And that means whoever is on the list who gets the most votes, no matter how many, could become the new governor of California for the next year or so. Right now, it's looking like that would be Larry Elder. The polls that have come out lately show that, you know, Gavin Newsom is doing really, really well, and he's 16 points up in the 538 aggregate. But let me just tell you, the polling was extremely wrong in basically like the past several elections going back 5 or so years. So I wouldn't rely on that. And more importantly, when you see stories like this, and there are many, check out this one. We got this one. Actually, this is not, that's not the story I was looking for. Here's the one from Dave Rubin. He says, holy ish, listen to this as an at an L.A. voting voting center. Voter, quote, about 70% of votes at this location have been already shown as cast, but they are not election official. Right, right. This is someone questioning Supervisor Vincent McCormick. These are from, this is a verified Twitter user posting this video. So people are looking at this stuff. They're thinking something, you know, bad is happening. I'll say this, and then we'll jump into that conversation. Don't let it demoralize you. Mm. For real, right now, I see a lot of people saying things. They're sharing these stories saying, like, what's the point? Oh, like, there is a point. It's go out and vote. Because this is a story about a handful of people. And for all you know, it was a glitch. That's all it was. And they fixed it. And how many people now are like, I give up. What's the point? That's the problem. You've got to hold the line. It's like that movie. I mentioned this earlier. The movie with Mel Gibson, The Patriot. Hmm. When the British are charging in and then the militia starts breaking, he's like, no, and he grabs the flag and he runs back towards them and he says, hold the line, and they do, and they win. That's what you got to do. Yeah, otherwise Gavin Newsom wins, right?
Right, you don't want that. I mean, who needs several more years of that hair? You know what I mean?
Well, he'll get one more year, I suppose. But,
right, yeah.
But then what, does even if there is a recall?
We'll see. I mean, I guess if anything, you would expect that this has ruined him for the national stage because it seems like he was being primed for it. But I would have said the same thing about Kamala Harris and her record on well, everything, right? Like
she's awful.
It's very bizarre how most of the female candidates at the federal level that the Democrats seem to push are have records that are completely antithetical to their causes at the time. Like, think about Hillary Clinton. At the time, the priorities for the Democrats were getting out of Iraq, you know, women first, all this stuff, marriage equality. She was against marriage equality until 2013 when she got forced into being for it. She voted for everything, Iraq, the Patriot Act, the new Iraq, everything, voted for all that. And she spent the late 90s going after the personal lives of all the women her husband allegedly sexually assaulted, right? So she checked all the boxes on the other side. She couldn't have been a worse candidate. And then remember the narrative from that election. She's single most qualified candidate in U.S. history for president, I believe is what was said. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? Like, she doesn't believe any of the things that you believe and you're putting her forward. That is, I mean, it just shows you how completely morally bankrupt all this stuff really is.
YouTube's right? Giving us the business.
Yeah, it is. Trying to try to fix it.
Yeah, YouTube.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Eisenhower was the best, one of the best presidents anyway. Recently.
What about him?
Yeah, for sure.
He was a military commander, so he knew what he was doing with war.
Highway system.
He built the interstate.
Yep.
He oversaw
the GI Bill, the VA home loan that built the middle class in the United States. He's responsible for a lot of stuff. Right.
I like that.
Good president. Yep.
This Gavin Newsom guy's a little awkward. The gel in his hair.
He's a caricature of all the things people hate about politicians.
And California. You know what I mean?
Like, if you're trying to sneak in and be the new guy on the block and, like, you know, be a professional politician, you at least have to, if you're a wolf, you better put the sheep's clothes on. If you show up dressed like a wolf, he's like, oh, this guy's he's a wolf.
Yeah, but it's working for him.
That's the shocking part.
Yeah,
you know, Gavin Newsom looks like there's a movie where there's a villain, a politician who's the villain.
Yeah.
But he's not like the main bad guy. He's like, you know, the secret supervillain has bought a politician, and Gavin Newsom would play the generic politician, sellout corporate, you know, corrupt criminal. That's what he looks like.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, you know, look, you see the problems California's facing, and you have to wonder what it is the guy does. I know that he puts in absurd COVID restrictions and then violates them. And I know that the state has been in, shambles.
Right.
For some time now, and he's not doing anything about it.
He's been really supportive of the movement towards lawlessness there as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were talking about it earlier about how Soros has been financially invested in all these attorney general and judge races across the country over the past 6 years or so. And all of a sudden, he just dumps $1 million in Newsom's recall campaign. That's kind of bizarre, right? I mean, then you have Gascon and the DA in L.A. that are... I think they're going to start paying people to not shoot other people, right?
Yes.
You guys have probably talked about that.
Was that in L.A.?
No.
That was in San Fran, wasn't it?
Oh, no. Is that Portland or San Francisco or somewhere else?
It's in California. It is in California.
Can't keep up.
Yeah, they decided, you know what? How about we – but the funny thing is, like, how do you pay someone not to shoot someone?
How can you pay me? I didn't do it.
I'm never going to shoot someone.
What their plan is, they're going to identify people who are likely to, like, commit crimes or whatever. So what does that mean? They're going to go up to somebody and be like, we've determined that you are probably a low-life degenerate who would shoot someone, so we're going to give you money right now and hope you don't.
Like, how do you feel about that as a criminal? Are you like, all right, cool, I'm going to play the grift and get the money? But it's they were talking about $300. That's a couple of transactions if you're a drug dealer, right?
That's nothing.
I mean, that's...
And they said if you get a job, too, it's $500. I got like, don't shoot someone and you'll get $500.
This is real?
Yes.
I got a job and didn't shoot someone and all I got was this $500. That's what
I know,
the
right?
Says.
I don't know. It seems a little...
Ridiculous.
The heck?
That's very bizarre.
San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco. Yeah, so, well, they're also paying people $85,000 a year to pick up human excrement off the ground. So
you know what's really funny? Here's the way I describe that to people. I'm like, so you live in a city, right? You know, where you live in a city, sir, yes?
Mm-hmm.
You have a fire department?
Yeah.
You have a police department?
Yep.
You have a EMS?
Yep.
Do you have a poop department?
I mean, there's a Department of Sanitation, I think, that processes water.
Do you have
water.
A poop
nope,
department?
Nope.
San Francisco literally has a poop department.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a joke.
What are the uniforms look
Recall
like?
Recall this guy. I mean, come on.
I'm curious.
You know, in a way, I got to say, I don't know if I can blame the governor. I don't know if I can blame the leaders of overseeing the ship as it's sinking, because we've been on this course since 1913, if not before that. But we're basically built a Ponzi scheme, and now we're seeing it shatter. And I don't care who is in charge of that. If they're going to try and pilot that, it's going to shatter. And so it's like no reason to pariah these dudes.
Why 1913?
Federal Reserve was formed.
Right, but you really think that was the end? And
yeah,
tell
it was
me
the
why.
Coercion of the American government by the theocrat.
I agree with him.
By the fascists,
by
whatever
the
you want to call them.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen, we were talking about it earlier, have you ever seen that Canadian sci-fi series Continuum?
Mm-mm.
You should watch it. Basically, they have like a corporate Congress. So,
ooh.
Yeah. And it's set in like the it's set in like the early 21st century in Seattle, I believe, but they're all Canadians. And
what's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Corporations fund the government more or less. And so they have a say in what happens and what doesn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. And if, obviously in the future, it's a dystopian nightmare. But I feel like right now, the ability of anyone, regardless if it's a corporate interest or the government, to control what information is and isn't available, right? Especially these days when it's so easy to spin a piece of information, that is more powerful than any weapon you could ever dream of. Right?
It's fourth and fifth generational warfare.
Yeah.
You know what's been going through my head recently is, should I respond to that guy? If someone I like or someone says something, I'm like, if I make a response to them, am I going to get flagged and put on a list? That's effed. I mean, so far, I just said effed. I didn't say the word that I normally say out loud. I am censoring myself at a level I've never done before. Maybe not never, because I was in the entertainment industry.
Right, and I want to say you can't go on like Tucker Carlson's show and say a lot. You can say more on this show than you can say on Tucker Carlson's show.
What's disturbing me is I'm just not responding to certain people because I'm afraid it's going to put me on a list.
You're on the list already. Isn't that crazy? Bro, are you crazy? Come on. Sitting here on Timcast IRL.
I mean, I guess that's one way to think. Just assume I'm already on the list and just talk to anyone I want to talk to. But like, the way they're tracking social media and like persecuting people that were near the Capitol on January 6th.
Firing them from their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's weird. I'm sure you guys have talked exhaustively about the Capitol thing, but I always wondered, and I'm curious what your audience thinks about this idea. So the United States has on record about 400 million guns, so more guns than people. And so it's the most armed population on earth. And then the most armed subsection of that population, what they consider to be the far right, shows up to overthrow the government, and they left all their guns at home.
Yeah.
That seems plausible, right?
Respecting the local laws of that government.
I believe that there are people that exist that are crazy, that happen to be conservative, and they're going to do dumb stuff sometimes, and they'll say they're doing it on behalf of conservatives the same way people do from the left, from religion, from everywhere, right? Always. That will always exist. And I'll believe it exists if you provide me evidence to that effect in a certain circumstance. But when you tell me that 300 or 400 people show up out of a mass of like 1.3 million people and they showed up to overthrow the government and forgot all their weapons. I don't believe you.
The FBI said it. That's not true. There was no coordinated effort. Wasn't.
They were mad because the way the election, they thought the election was going with the voting. Right. So they wanted to show power. They wanted to feel like they had some sort of power.
Right. Mm-hmm. Ian, why don't you put in file a FOIA request for your name and see what comes up?
Oh. I thought about it, but it's like, just do I want to dig up that wormhole, man? I'm down. I would like. I guess I could see it. I don't want to make myself more paranoid than I need
to be. They'll quote you a bunch of times on this show, probably.
Yeah.
I bet mine's massive. You know, everyone here, I'm sure a lot of people who watch actually might have something.
Well, the SPLC's weighed in on you a number of times, right?
There was like two things, and one got retracted with an apology because they claimed that a Holocaust-denying archive of a website that I had gone to Iran for a Holocaust denying conference, which is like one of the most insane crackpot things you can ever publish. And so they were forced to take that down, issue a retraction and apology, right? Because I've never been to Iran. That's just plumb nuts.
Well, Bill Maher and Religulous, have you seen that? Looks like a documentary.
Religulous?
So he went to this area and visited with a Jewish rabbi who is a Holocaust denier. So is he on a list? Is Bill Maher on a list for interviewing people that he finds?
Even if you
went to something like that to cover it, that is what journalism is supposed to be, right?
Well, no, this website claimed I was like a speaker.
Oh boy.
And it's just like, it's just crackpot nonsense. It's like, dude, if some weirdo puts my name on a website, you believe it's true? So they had to take it down and apologize.
The
SPLC is immaterial.
They're nonsense.
The people who spend their time worried, look, I get a lot of smear pieces written about me all the time. Mm. And you know what the most annoying thing in the world is when someone sends me it.
Mm.
And I'm like, first of all, you think I don't know? Second of all, why should I read it or care? Like, literally, it's not affecting me in any way. There's zero impact on my business. It's just a waste of time from whiny, you know, stupid babies who I don't care about.
It is your time is certainly better spent doing other things.
And the people, it's a distraction. They try and wrap you up and catch you up in the stuff. And you know what? To segue right back into what we're talking about, it's demoralizing.
It is, yeah.
If you spend all your day looking at the people saying mean things about you, it's distracting you from doing good work. They're snaring you in that trap. Ignore it.
I would say getting involved in these in the weeds conversations about what is and isn't. We were talking about this earlier. People are spending a lot of time debating what communism and socialism and fascism is. Why don't we just call it what it is? It's authoritarianism. It doesn't matter where it comes from. If your house is on fire, you're not sitting there like, I wonder how my house caught on fire. No, you're grabbing buckets of water and trying to put the fire out,
right,
man. You know, and it's going to take a collective effort to do that. And I understand that tempers run hot and all this stuff, and people are afraid.
I want to let's talk about this story in California. We'll talk about why people are upset. So this was something I saw retweeted, and it's this guy telling a story. I don't know if the story is true or not. It's just Twitter, but let's check it out. I think it's interesting. He says, last week, literally on the day my new wife and I came home to SF after our wedding, an intoxicated man confronted us on our doorstep, blocked the way out of our home, and threatened to stab me. Unfortunately, this isn't an unusual occurrence in our city, and my experience is no more special than anyone else's. So this isn't a thread about the incident itself, for what it's worth. We live in what is typically considered a safe neighborhood. Instead, I wanted to share what I learned today about what crimes are and aren't reported in San Francisco. It was eye-opening for me, and I hope it will be for you. Before anything, let me say that thankfully no one was hurt. SFPD arrived quickly on the scene, engaged the attacker in a calm and safe manner. Afterward, one of the officers asked me if I'd like to press charges. Being relatively unfamiliar with this process, I asked him to in turn what he advised, to which he replied that he was prohibited from influencing members of the public on such decisions. This is a sensible prohibition, as one can imagine. He says, if I didn't press charges, the police would issue a warning to the attacker. And in almost all cases, that's enough to scare offenders of this sort away. If I did press charges, I'd have to provide a statement, fill out a good amount of paperwork, and then show up on the day the attacker is summoned to court. If he appeared, not guaranteed, the sentence would probably be a slap on the wrist. As someone involved with the campaign to recall District Attorney Bowden, I was thus faced with a dilemma. On one hand, I think it's our civic duty to report crimes. Doing so is a bulwark against sophistry employed by Bowden and his supporters, claiming that crime in SF is down. On the other hand, if I did press charges, Bowden's stats would show him as having filed charges in this incident, or his more favored stat, having taken action, despite the end result being the same as if no arrest were made, a dangerous man free on the streets. The other complication I faced was that my sister was with us, visiting from abroad and in town for just one day. We were on our way out to visit a museum and see the city. Did I want to spend the limited time she had with us filling out forms? So I decided not to press charges. If I had to do it all over again, maybe I would have done otherwise, but in the moment, I had to prioritize rapidly. What's the upshot of all this? I've previously posted about how crime is trending up in San Francisco and how Bowden's attempts to claim that crime is down rely on a misleading representation of aggregate numbers. And so he goes on, and you get the gist of what the story is and why I wanted to get into it. We were mentioning George Soros-funded DAs, the breakdown. I could be wrong. Isn't Chesa Boden one of these DAs? He was funded by, he received some contributions from.
But there were like 275 judges and DAs across the country. It wasn't just in, it wasn't even just in blue states. It was everywhere.
So, you know, to bring back to the context of Gavin Newsom's recall, we mentioned the Pooh Patrol in San Francisco. You know, so there's literally a department in San Francisco that their whole job is just literally going around cleaning up human waste off the streets. You know, I can't blame Gavin Newsom directly for that. He's the governor. He's not a mayor. He's not dealing with the nitty-gritty local
stuff.
Well,
he was the mayor of San Francisco.
Well, there you go. I was going to say right now, but yes. Yeah.
And your current vice president was the district attorney of San Francisco as well.
I just want to make it clear, because when I'm like, recall him, people are going to be like, he's not even the mayor of San Francisco. And it's like, hold on. I'm getting to the point is that all of these people are part of the same party that coordinates locally, statewide, nationally. You have national-level Democrats coming in supporting policies like they were trying to repeal the Civil Rights Act in their Constitution.
Right.
And you had national-level Democrats from other areas coming in and supporting this. Absolutely insane. And now you have Gavin Newsom, which represents the fractured and broken power structure that is California, that results in things like this.
So you think he's an effigy then, and not necessarily individualistically to blame. He's just an effigy of what's wrong, and removing him is somehow symbolic. No.
I think he's to blame for a lot of this stuff. Okay. I was just trying to clarify, like, if you come out right now and say, you know, that Gavin Newsom should be recalled, look at the crime in San Francisco, the immediate reaction from the left is going to be like, he's the governor, he doesn't deal with local issues.
Right.
Right now, I think that's fair to point out. And he's been in for what, like 3 years, has it been?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So I think the issue is, well, for one, you got to get rid of all of them. You got to get all these Democrats got to get voted out.
Well, it's not just the politicians, though. I mean, it's the, who do you think Joe Biden's running the White House right now? It's probably his chief of staff, right?
No, I think it's him. Decisions. I do think it's him.
I struggle to believe that, because he can't string a sentence together half
and that's
the time.
The point.
Yeah, when he's they're not going to let me answer any questions. Like, he's actually said that a couple of times.
Yeah, but I think it's him. And so here's what people assume. They assume there's someone – I assumed this for a while too, that someone's sitting there going like, okay, Joe, when you go up, you have to do this, you have to do that. And he's like, oh, okay. Mm. I don't think that's what's happening. What I think is happening is that Joe sitting in the room, you know, he's at the table, oval table or whatever, you know, with people sitting all around.
Right.
And then they're looking at him and he goes – you know, we got Afghanistan. Get them out. You know, Bagram. Get them out. And then they go, you got it, boss. And they walk out. And they evacuate Bagram, and the whole place falls apart. And then By the way, finish your thought, and I'll get into that. I think what ends up happening is you've got sycophants sitting around just waiting for their turn, hoping, maybe. You know. That, like, there's no cohesive structure here.
That's a big problem in the military as well. The reason you're seeing all these incompetent, ineffectual general officers is because of careerism. They're more interested in promoting their own career than they are giving feedback that might get them a negative response. That's what I'm being told from the
Pentagon right now.
These chiefs of staff are like, they don't want to get, or the, not these chiefs, but these joint chiefs or whatever, they don't want to get fired. They don't want to get demoted.
Right.
And Biden has the power to do that.
It's beyond, they serve at the pleasure of the president. He can remove and replace them whenever he wants. But it's beyond that. What happened with James Mattis, who was a darling of the American military for a while? I mean, service members loved this guy for a while. And then he was part of this, what was it, the 700 general officers and former intelligence people that wrote a letter against Donald Trump supporting Joe Biden for the election. He was one of those guys that did that. And about a month afterwards, he got hired to the board of General Dynamics, right? You know what I mean? It's weird. So it's well beyond just the... It's well beyond just the careerism. It's what that career turns into afterwards. Lloyd Austin worked for a company, right? And that company was bidding on a multi-billion-dollar contract, and the U.S. government had said that they're probably not going to get it. It doesn't look good for them. We're going to go with the other guy. And he becomes the Secretary of Defense, and I think about a month later, or 3 months later, that his former company gets that contract. This is weird. So it's not just, I get what you're saying about removing all these politicians, but that is the very top layer.
Right.
Of scum, if you want to call it.
Well,
that.
So I would go into this and say we have a structural decay across the board.
Correct, yeah.
When people are willing to vote for no reason other than tribe to earn points or because they believe some garbage nonsense.
Right.
Or in this instance, you've got, you know, people aren't reporting crimes because what's the point? I've been in the situation. I'm sure you guys have as well, where it's like I had one incident where I was driving with my brother and we got hit by a cab. And the cops were like, you know, okay, we'll file all this, but you guys are going to show up, right? Like, you'll show up to court if we do this.
Right, yeah, because they have to show up regardless if you do or not.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, let's do this. And it's easy to say at the time, and then what happens? A month goes by, and they're like, okay, here's the date and time you got to show up. And I'm like, dude, I got work.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just go off work for this, man.
Right? If it's a serious enough crime, sometimes years go by. If they have a good enough attorney, sometimes years go by.
So we've got structural decay across the board in every facet. And so, yeah, maybe it's fair to say just simply recalling, you know, Newsom isn't enough. It's good. I definitely think, you know, getting a year of someone else in there is a good thing. But, you know, you're talking about the military. Mm. I've gotten emails. We've heard a ton of stories, people resigning. Someone sent me a resignation letter recently. Someone apparently, you know, was an officer and announced over just the wokeness CRT and the vax mandate. They're like, I am quitting. And it's actually sad, really, because I've heard these stories of people who are like, it was my dream to be, you know, to have a career in the military, work there until retirement. And now it's like, I'm in my mid 30s and I'm out. I'm done. Can't do it.
Right.
Some people even giving up like their pensions.
It's super sad, too, because who's going to fight this next war? It's not going to be these guys. We saw in Afghanistan this past couple of weeks, right? Their work needed to get done. And I have no lack of faith in the 82nd Airborne guys who were there or the Marines that were there. I'm sure, I have no doubt that they're plenty capable of doing that job. But because of the leadership there, they weren't allowed to do that, right? So I wonder who's going to fight the next one. And we saw the answer. It was guys like Tim Kennedy and these other guys that went over there on their own dime, right? Guys that are, well, Tim's still in, but everybody but him was already out of the military. They had served their country. They were done. And they spent their own money to go back to conduct these operations, not to go kill people or blow things up. They went over there to save people, right? That's what the American warfighter does. They are, and it troubles me that the ranks of the U.S. service member have now been infected with this nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know, like you were talking about police earlier, I'm not sure how much you can trust the individual at this point. You know what I mean? It's getting bad. Like this female staff sergeant that posted a video, like, you know, when people are coming door to door, it's going to be me and I'll shoot you or whatever. Like, first of all, you never held a gun in your life. And it's pretty obvious, but that's who
they want. Though.
This lieutenant colonel gets booted out of his position, and then he resigns. This woman, I don't know what's happened to her. Have you heard any news about her?
Nothing.
That seems like somebody that should be immediately kicked out of the military.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
They want stormtroopers. Yeah. They don't want rational thinking individuals who are going to say, like, here's the Constitution, here's what my, you know.
You right. got an officer that publicly said she was going to storm people's doors.
She was a non-commissioned officer, Staff Sergeant E6. Yeah. Oh, she didn't say she was going to. She said when it starts or whatever she said. Yeah. I don't want to paraphrase too much. But she basically said the people going door to door, that's going to be me and I will.
That's terror. She was like, I mean, that's a form of terror.
She was like, what do you think's going to happen when we're ordered to, you know, to point you down? It's not going to, it's going to be us and we're going to do it and stuff like that.
Instead, what she says is you refuse the command.
You know, I firmly believe and I've believed for a very long time that if ordered, most probably enlisted would do it, would absolutely shoot an American. No joke.
People and I've robots.
Well,
man.
We've seen it before, right? Kent State. It's happened in our parents' lifetime.
Yeah. 1970, May 4th. I went to Kent State for college. They fired on the crowd. The National Guard fired on the crowd, killed four college kids.
Yep. One guy took a bullet through his hand. No, but so I've you know been around military people for a large portion of my life, and there's a lot of people who argue with me in chat or like an email and being like, you don't understand, you know, like, you know, soldiers, they'll do the right thing. They're not robots. And I'm like,
they're not robots.
It's the bystander effect though, right? People, psychology is infectious. Nothing is more infectious than psychology and people in groups. It's the mob. We've been discussing the psychology of the mob for as long as human beings have been discussing psychology. The Stanford Prison Experiment, for example, you put people in hierarchical structures of power and then mob rule takes over and then you go to base instinct. That's what happens unless you're very well trained.
But when it comes to the military, it's actually really simple to understand why this she says E6, you said? She's right. They would do this. You know why? It's really, really simple. If Ian is running through the streets with a red bandana on or whatever, maybe he's jogging. That's
right.
It. And then she's standing there and she gets an order like, that's the guy. He's the terrorist. Take him down. Take him down. Do you think she's going to be like,
No, she shouldn't question that order. I mean,
she's
going to
be
weird
like,
thing about
you
the
got
military.
It.
You're like, if I question the order, are people going to die?
I mean, we're talking about the Bourne Identity right now, right? Or I guess the third movie where he finally meets up with the old guy and he's like,
is that the Bourne Supremacy?
I think, or the Bourne Redundancy, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, right.
But it came down to like, you got to shoot this guy. Why? And the reason was they wanted to break the person, right? Your individualism is gone. You thinking is gone. You kill who we tell you to kill. And that's not how it works. That's not how we trained our people in the 82nd Airborne. We put ourselves at great risk on a relatively regular basis to not inflict harm on people unnecessarily, right? Can't say the same about Obama, right? The drone strike stuff killed a lot of innocent people. I think something like 30% of the people killed in those strikes were just standing there.
One of the first things he did was bombing a village of women and children.
I've heard numbers that collateral damage of drone strikes are like
they started
large, like 90%.
Rough,
but they
only started just claiming that, oh, it's a military age male. They're an enemy combatant.
Right. Anybody, a military age male, by the way, is a male 14 years old or older.
Right. No, so I think people need to understand this when they just to reiterate to a certain extent. Think about you yourself standing around with your friends. You hear a report like Antifa's coming in. They're armed. They got handguns. You see what just happened in Portland where they were shooting at the Proud Boys randomly. Like this was there was no reason. Okay, so they were retreating. The Proud Boys like were walking forward and they had like you know clubs and shields or whatever. Probably not a good idea, regardless. This guy turns around with a gun and starts randomly just firing and hits one of the guys in the legs. Now imagine you hear that. And then all of a sudden, you see a dude with, you know, what looks like a weapon, and he's wearing all black, and then he's running towards you, and then they're like, that's him, stop him. Are you going to be like,
it's not even just from your leadership. The panic can happen in those situations under any normal or any number of circumstances. So, we're talking about the one of the founding moments of our republic here. The reason that John Adams ended up getting involved with the Continental Congress and the movement towards becoming America, right, and breaking off of the British Empire is because there were British soldiers in Boston, and they were guarding some areas. There was a protest by the Sons of Liberty, which was run by his cousin Sam Adams, right? Not the beer guy, or maybe
not
the
beer guy. No, it's not.
Maybe he is the beer guy. I don't know. He was a politician, but Sam Adams is doing this thing. Somebody behind the British soldiers, first of all, people are throwing heavy objects and hit one of the kids in the head, and then somebody behind them yelled fire.
Yep.
Right. Finally, through the trial, they figured it out, and John Adams represented the British people.
Yeah.
And he felt they got a good trial. They did. They got off. Mm-hmm. And then still the Crown sent over an edict saying all military court-martials will now be tried back in England. So he's like, well, you don't even believe in our ability to self-govern. Right. Now I'm going to get involved. And he became the second president of the United States. So this stuff can happen in any kind of power vacuum. It doesn't matter if it's a leader doing it or if it's just the fog of war. You know what I mean? And imagine what the fog of war looks like in modern day when it's brother on brother.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that it's not evil. When, you know, a lot of people were criticizing this young woman over saying it. And, you know, I didn't really want to do a big segment on that because I'm like, I don't know what the full context is. I don't know. It's like a 5-10 second clip or whatever. Mm-hmm. Who knows what she's talking about? It was jump cutty. And I'm like, it's not much I can add to that. You know, if there was like a 10-minute thing she was talking about, or there are other videos where she was explaining why this subject came up, maybe there'd be more to criticize.
Right.
But I think you need to realize you're surrounded by your buddies, people you know, people you trust, people who are there to protect you. And that's you. That's your group. You're not going to sit around and wait to find out when you're dealing with a conflict situation. I've been in conflict situations. Mm. And I don't sit back and be like, well, hold on. Maybe this guy in the Antifa thing who was threatening us might not be Antifa. No, we leave. We get out. Right. Now, if you're there actively trying to suppress or prevent violence, and then you see someone, you're not just going to assume, well, let's just calmly talk to this guy. No, this is why whenever I've been arrested, like legit arrested by cops while covering things, I've always been released without being processed. Like charges never occur or anything like that. Mm. Because when I was in DC on J20 in 2017, when Trump was being inaugurated, they surrounded everybody. I got trapped in this group. It was a bunch of Antifa types. Mm. I stood off to the side. And I talked to the cop, like the cops that were standing there with their batons out guarding everybody. I was like, hey, I just want to let you know I'm a journalist. And they were like, don't care. And I'm like, is there a supervisor? And then they were like, some guy behind him was like, I'll get a supervisor. And I told the supervisor, like, hey, I just want to let you know I'm a journalist. Mm. And he was like, doesn't matter. You're all under arrest. And I was like, just letting you know. When I was talking to the cop who was standing next to me because he's guarding this group, I'd be like, officer, I'm going to place my bag down and I'm going to be putting my shirt away and taking my phone out just so you know. Mm. And then he would like nod a little bit, and then I would unzip it slowly. I'd open it wide, pull out my phone, put my shirt in, because he doesn't know who I am. He's not going to sit here pretending he knows that I'm not Antifa or whatever or violent.
Right, that's a good...
He'd be pulling out a club from my bag.
It's a very good point. Why not, in that scenario, just be... For the person who might be on the threatened end of that exchange, am I really going to let my politeness get me killed? Does that seem like a good trade-off to you? Or could we as a society agree that this is a messed up situation? Neither one of us wanted it to come to this, but here it is. So let's everybody put your hands up and back away slowly, and then we'll go out in our separate directions or whatever, right? I mean, it seems like a reasonable way to handle that, but people get super emotionally charged. And look, I'm not innocent of that. I get pissed off as much as anybody else, right?
Yeah.
Probably more so. I lash out all the time. I've been in fights with some of my closest friends over nonsense. Like Alex Jones is one of my closest friends. We talk all the time. He actually just sent me some cool videos of him shooting the other day. He went pretty hard after some of my buddies at Black Rifle. I thought he was out of line, and I said some things that I thought also were out of line. Like, and the funny thing is, a lot of people on the internet talk about it still. 2 days after that, we were sharing photos from respective lakes that we were at. You know what I mean? It wasn't ever really a rift between us, but it gets perceived like that, and it's unfortunate that it can come to that sometimes. And I think it's because things get so heated, we start to prioritize the wrong stuff.
I think we need to understand that there's different bubbles within bubbles within bubbles, right? So we have the largest bubble of like America. Well, technically, I guess you have the largest bubble of the world. Then you have like America within the world.
Right.
Then you have the different regions, different states, different cities. Within that, there's different power structures, different authorities. You always have that trope of the cop investigating a murder, and the FBI guy walks in and goes, "We're taking over."
Yeah, this is my jurisdiction. Yeah.
Yeah, the feds are involved.
Like Willem Dafoe in Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
That's who the blank I am or whatever.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent performance. Mm-hmm. But so when it comes to, you know, communication breakdown, when you have things moving so quickly, it's ultimately going to be like the people around you, is the paramount to be protected. And right. sometimes there's even friendly fire between different law enforcement divisions, or there's one funny story yeah. where like the DEA and the FBI like busted each other.
Oh yeah, setting, I saw that. Yeah,
so, setting up like a drugs thing.
That's
or something.
So fun. I'm glad that happened. That's just I as a taxpayer, I don't love the fact that taxpayer money was wasted. But I guess if it was wasted on them with each other and not busting some poor guy that's just trying to get high, to be honest.
Yeah.
Leave him alone.
Maybe. Well, let's talk about, so I think we got to the point on that one, but what happens then when you take a confusing situation where you've got people who don't have to do and you add in derelict leadership?
Right.
Check out this story. All right. You're going to love this. From Fox News, White House abruptly cuts feed of Biden mid-sentence as he asks question at wildfires briefing. Biden's White House has history of preventing public from hearing him on the cuff. It's not the first time that after a presentation or whatever, people start asking questions and the feed just abruptly shuts off.
No, it's happened numerous times. I mean, one time he actually made the decision to turn around and walk off stage.
Yes. Well, it was does it all the time.
It was after he was talking about the storm and they were like, what about Afghanistan? He goes, no, we're not doing that. And he just walked out. I mean, say what you want to about Trump. I mean, I'm one of these people that enjoyed Trump's policies for the most part. There's some things I didn't like about it, but the sometimes he just went a little, it's not even that he went too far. I understand why he talked the way he did.
Yeah.
But it's at some point you have to be like, all right, cool, man. I'm just going to get the message out there and then keep doing this good work. Because you know what nobody's talking about right now? It is the historically low unemployment and for black people in the country. Nobody's
during Trump, you mean?
During Trump, yeah. Right. Nobody's talking
not right
about,
now.
No, of course not, no. Nobody's talking about how the five major peace deals between Middle Eastern countries and Israel for the first time in history. Right. Nobody's talking about any of that stuff. All they're talking about is how he said X, Y, Z about the election and how he's behaved since then.
Yep.
I feel like if you're that right about stuff, and it's the results of his foreign domestic economic policies were pretty good. If you're that right about stuff in principle, I think you have some responsibility to behave a certain way to continue getting it done. But I do understand that he was under people like to do these whataboutisms and talk about who gets more heat than whom. I've never seen anybody get trashed more or more regularly than Donald Trump. Never. In the history of American media.
Data proves it.
Yeah. I've never seen it. I mean, it's wild.
The data tracking negative press for Trump, it was like 90% of stories were negative, and it was like 2 to 3 times as many stories than any other.
Why is that? Was he a real threat to the power structure?
Oh, yeah, dude, of course. You think he was, look, you had Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, the insurgent candidates, and Trump broke through.
I don't know if any president can threaten the establishment anymore. Like, Kennedy went down, man. He said, I'm going to bust up the CIA, and then he died shortly after.
Well,
like,
I mean,
no one's done it since.
My understanding is that the CIA clipped him because of the Bay of Pigs, because he left.
He refused
back there. Yeah.
Oh, what's the story there?
The story. Well, you should have. I know your fans probably don't like him, but you should have Evan from Black Rifle come on. He worked for the agency for a while. His theory is that George H.W. Bush clipped Kennedy because he was one of the leaders of that Operation Bay of Pigs. The belief is that he was a non-official cover guy, or like an operator. And the reason people believe that is because he went from a congressman to the deputy director of operations, which is the most important job at the agency. Hmm. Like, anything that happens there goes through that office.
You know, the challenge is with all that stuff, though, is how many assumptions do you have to make
at
that point?
Yeah, yeah. Those it's aside, just, I used to think that I could get to the position of president and then fix it. I'd be like, I'll get in there. I'll get all the information. I'll finally fix it all so that we don't have to worry about this anymore. But now it's such a web that you get in there as this piece, the king piece. The king's a terrible piece in chess. I mean, can't do it. You gotta guard it.
It's pretty killed. Bad.
It's the worst piece. The pawn is the worst piece.
Technically, well, it's arguable. Pawns can transform.
But the king's pretty terrible. It just sits there in hiding and wait.
To be honest, the king can move one space in every direction. It's not bad.
Okay.
But a little off topic.
The president doesn't have as much power as we may think. There is the queen. Who's the queen in our society right now? I don't know.
Trump proved it. Trump tried to do so much, and he was blocked. He should have fired way more people. But I don't need to get into Trump, right? Right. The problem we have right now is that people hated the guy so much because the media hated him so much, because the establishment hated him so much, that now we are at lack thereof when it comes to president, when it comes to leadership.
Right.
Joe Biden is here's the way I describe it. Donald Trump was anti-elected. The enthusiasm for Joe Biden was in the gutter. And all the Trump supporters were saying that was evidence that Trump's going to win. It's going to be a landslide. Mm. And Trump's enthusiasm was through the roof.
Yeah.
But enthusiasm against Trump was through the roof, rivaling enthusiasm for him. And so people just voted for a jabbering, unwell man.
Senile.
With
vascular dementia. Let's be real.
Right.
He's got vascular dementia.
And he would call a lid. Yep. And now they won't even let him speak. He tries to answer questions and he goes, I know I'm going to get in trouble if I do this. Remember when he was calling on the press and then one of the journalists, I think it was from PBS, asked a question and he goes, I thought the question was supposed to, anyway. Like, he knew in advance what he was going
to
be asked.
And
sometimes
he's like, I'm not supposed to call on you, but what do you have to say?
Yeah, right.
Like, you can tell, like, the old Joe Biden that's still rattling around there somewhere that likes a good scrap. You know what I mean? He's just like, all right, come on. Because say what you want about Trump, but he would stand up there and talk trash back and forth with the media all day if they would let him.
Yeah, with Jim Acosta.
Like, he would just sit there, and that would be the presidency. It would be 4 years of him versus Jim Acosta.
What kind of uppers do you think they got Joe Biden on? So that he can do these events.
It's got to be like B12 and Adderall, right?
Just like got modafinil,
mainlining that stuff into his body. There's no way he goes from this like hunched over guy that looks like he should be in an old rickety FDR era wheelchair with a shawl in his lap.
That's what
to a guy who's like alert and bright, but he's a little too alert and he's giddy about being
alert,
like, you know what I mean?
They've been mainlining modafinil and then like his doctor's like, he's talking to Kamala, we can't keep pushing him like this. Yeah. His blood is 20% modafinil.
I saw a good
it's meme. Only keeping him away for 3 hours at this point.
I saw a good meme today. It was like, Kamala, you have to stop answering the phone. Did he die yet?
Oh jeez.
It's a little dark.
It's
but.
Very disturbing that we have this guy in charge of the military right now.
Bro, it's
this
like the Crypt Keeper.
Surrender.
I'm far less concerned about him being in charge of the military as I am Milley and Lloyd Austin.
Really?
Yeah. These guys are human garbage.
Both of them. Why is that?
But here's why. Let's go back to this. You mentioned Bagram earlier. A private, the lowest rank in the U.S. military in the 82nd Airborne, which is who deployed over there, along with the Marine Corps, would know that what they did strategically makes no sense.
Right.
Removing your... So the thing that is unique about the United States military, aside, we have a great Navy, we have nuclear capabilities, we have very well-trained operators and soldiers and Marines and such, but our air superiority is where we really dominate. It doesn't matter who attacks us. Even China, at their advanced level right now, could not compete with us in air superiority. We removed our number one piece. We removed our queen off the board in Bagram. And then what? We had to redeploy. I mean, the people that from the 82nd that went there, they're part of what's called the DRF-1, the Division Ready Force. They're on standby to deploy at any time within 18 hours. And that's not a game plan. That's the backup. That's the break in case of emergency situation. You don't do that. So when they went there, and then they just sat inside of the base waiting for something to happen. Also not what you do. The 82nd Airborne goes in and secures the airfield. And then typically, Rangers and sometimes Marines maybe, Rangers go push out, create standoff, and then something like JSOC will conduct operations in the area, right? That's how that works. And I know Milley knows this because he was in Panama when we did exactly that, right? It was in 1989. Like, he knows all this stuff. So the fact that these plans that Biden had, and this is why, by the way, excuse me, this is why the Armed Services Committee has now requested, or demanded rather, that Lloyd Austin give them his plan, right, for the Afghan extraction. Like, what the hell was this?
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense. Yeah, have you ever seen Congress demand a plan from a military commander before because it didn't make sense?
No, not in my lifetime.
Right. So the question is why? Now we're seeing it. Dakota Meyer and I were talking about this on our show, and people... We said it in the mainstream media a couple places, and people were like, no, that's not happening. And one lady in particular tried to go after us about it. Our idea was this, and it's not an idea, it's stuff we heard from people, but the idea is that the reason that Biden was so sure when he said, we're going to get all our people out, the reason that he had this stupid plan in the first place, the reason that he gave up a list of American citizens to the Taliban is exactly what you saw yesterday. So we predicted that this past weekend going into this week, you would see airlifts of U.S. citizens coming out of Afghanistan and you would see pallets of cash going in. So Saturday and Sunday, two planes full of American citizens leave. Today, it's announced $64 billion is going back to Afghanistan. Are we going to pretend like that's not the Taliban? Like we did just give them $64 billion more dollars on top of the 88?
This was always assumed to be the outcome with the current leadership.
Of course.
Lack thereof when it comes to leadership.
But the problem for me is I get all the politics and stuff like that, but how did that military plan go all the way up the chain of command and then all the way back down to the people who executed the plan without anybody ever saying anything?
It's a million. It's 64 million.
I just 64 million. It. Excuse yeah. me. Sorry.
How did it go up and down the chain without?
That's a good question.
It's internal rot. You know, look, man, that we had that professor earlier. The story came out where she said 9/11 was an attack on heteropatriarchal, you know, what? Capitalism or whatever. Yeah. Syracuse professor. You've got absolute systemic institutional decay. And we talk about how the left dominates institutions, but I'm sorry. What I really see happening is just there's interested groups knocking down the United States, period. Think about it this way. There are people right now cheering for Joe Biden's illegal mandate that bypasses the legislative branch. He's already attempted to bypass the legislative and the judicial with his eviction moratorium. And you have people cheering for it. That's basically like the U.S. system of governance has been corrupted and is breaking apart, and they're celebrating. Glad it's happening.
I mean, the only way this could be more perfect is if instead of Biden, it was Joe Lieberman, right? Because he looked like Emperor Palpatine. Do you remember that guy? Does everybody remember Lieberman
from Connecticut?
Yeah, he was from Connecticut, I think.
2008, did he run?
Yeah. I believe it was 2000 or 2004. Joe he was Lieberman. In the primaries.
I remember that guy.
Yeah, he looked like Palpatine. But this is that's what's happening here. It's very bizarre. And I guess it always kind of happens that way where, it's the only time that authoritarian movements are ever actually effective is when you convince the population that it's for their own good first.
Right.
And that is, they accept it.
But I think what we're seeing now is that people don't care about what is right, what is wrong. They just want to feel good. And so they want to do whatever the tribe tells them to do.
Right.
And so that's why you have
the social currency. Yeah.
Like, I think one of the best examples of this is Cameron Caskey, because I've interacted with him, and maybe it's unfair only because I haven't interacted with other more bad faith actors, but he tweets a whole lot of stuff. He's one of the Parkland kids. He tweets a whole bunch of stuff out about getting vaccinated and vaccine mandates. And then when I reply in good faith, it's all just garbage nonsense games to him. You know, he tweets garbage nonsense. He doesn't respond. So he's really interested in inflaming tensions and causing strife. And then when you try and like, I politely DM'd the guy and been like, hey, you know, just wanted to flag this for you. And he's like, I don't care. He's like, I'm not going to engage with you on this stuff. Right. Literally don't care. And then starts insulting and screen grabbing, insulting my followers. And I'm like, I thought this dude was more interested in actually accomplishing something, but you can see. I think one of the big problems we have with this country right now is there are young people on the left who are 100% demoralized. 100%.
Right.
So they grew up, these younger people grew up at a time with an economic collapse, parents who are probably struggling, that they themselves unable to find work, deciding to go to college, now have massive debt. Once again, we get into another crisis and they're like, why should I care about the world? Let it burn for all I care. And that's what they do. They go on Twitter, they start Twitter fights, and they don't care about solutions. They just want pain. They want it to burn.
And the three of us have acknowledged that we like to troll, or that like I was a big internet troll from like 2009 to 2016, yeah. And I realized how much damage I was doing. Seemed subtle. I was getting a good laugh out of it, but I think it was really messing people up.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly there's something fun about trolling because you need irony, right? Fundamentalism lacks irony. That's their problem. Like the idea that you can the verboten thing. Like comedy and the arts are important,
but
these people down a peg.
I'm not talking about trolling. You know, look, being sarcastic, silly, and posting on Twitter in ways that are trying to make a point.
Oh no, this kid you're talking about is just a knucklehead. He doesn't. He's only
hundreds
trying,
of thousands of followers.
He's only trying to make a point. He doesn't care about the cause.
He's
at
not
all.
Trying to make a point.
No.
He's not. That the point is, he's not trying to make a point. He's trying to start
make
fights
a scene. Right.
To make. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The way I see it is. I mean, I guess I can understand it to a certain extent. You know, they grew up in a world that was on fire, and the system is corrupt and broken, and so they're just like, why should I bother with it? It's like there's nothing to look forward to when you're born into the corrupt the Chang system, and so all
right,
they do is add
there's
to
no
the fire.
Hope, yeah, I mean, what's the quote from The Matrix? Hope is the quintessential human emotion, both the source of our greatest strength and weakness, or something like that. I mean, certainly, if you imagine Mel Gibson in The Patriot with his weird haircut and his tri-corner hat coming over the hill, waving the flag and telling people to charge, who is that in American society right now? Who isn't just sitting around bitching and crying about the state of things? Who's saying, you know what, guys, we can actually do this? Like, the only reason any of these politicians have any power is because we allow that to happen. Yep. You're telling me that 535 people plus the president and his staff in Washington are overpowering 350 million people? That is physically impossible.
But people are, unfortunately, we're a nation of cowards. And
absolutely. Well, I don't know if we're a nation of cowards. I think.
What I mean, I'm not calling everyone in this country cowards.
No, I understand what you mean. I think
we have a large quantity of cowards in this country.
There's a George Bernard Shaw quote, and it's liberty means responsibility. That's why most men dread it.
Yep.
Right? And I think it's like when you, we do it for social reasons too. You walk by someone and they trip a little bit and you divert your eyes because you don't want to get involved in that. I don't want to feel a collective shame because something just happened or whatever. And if you look at a piece of garbage on the ground and then you look back up and keep walking.
Shopping cart test. You know the shopping cart test?
Yeah. Where you leave it out, or who puts it away in the
You can tell, like, I guess I'll be a little bit more grandiose. You can tell the strength of the community by how many shopping carts are strewn about the supermarket parking lot.
That's kind of like broken window theory, right? I mean, I guess in the inverse of that.
For those that aren't familiar, it's basically returning a shopping cart to the corral takes very little time, if any. It doesn't reward you with anything. It's just the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You can also run and jump on it and ride it.
It's fun.
Yeah, there you go.
But you'll notice you go to some places and there are shopping carts just piled up all over the place, right? Because people go to their cars, push it to the side and say, I don't care. It'd take you only 10 seconds to do the right thing.
Mm.
Same thing with littering. So
I hate – that's one of my pet peeves is when people litter.
Yep.
That is the I see – I agree with that principle, the shopping cart principle, and I agree with what you're saying right now just for that reason because I can feel it. Like, just do the right thing. When people cross in the middle of the street and don't go to the crosswalk that's 20 feet away, that makes me mad. You know what I mean? We set it all up for you to do it right so you're safe, so the driver's safe, so everybody's safe, and you, because what? You felt like it, you just, not that I, like, look.
Breaking, no scruples.
It's not about following the rules, it's about personal responsibility. Like, if we're going to put so much weight on personal responsibility, my body, my choice, liberty, I want to do what I want to do, then do the right damn thing.
But we are a country of people who refuse to accept their responsibility. I'll put it that way.
Mm.
And that's true for the left and the right. You know, people have quoted Thomas Paine, let there be trouble in my day so that my children will know peace. And the number one thing I hear over and over again and did for years as to why people would not stand up against the tyranny was, I don't want to put my kids at risk.
Right.
So it's like 2 years ago when I said, they are coming to your workplace. They are going to come after you. They are going to subject you to this and your kids. They're going to do to your kids in the schools. You've got to speak up now before it's too late. And people would be like, look, I don't want to lose my job. I got to feed my kids. Okay. Well, now we're at the point where we're seeing all these Twitter messages pop up where people are like, I lost my job because of the mandates.
Right,
I'm losing my job. You know, my kids, I'm trying to pull them out of school now because of the CRT stuff. Oh no, the board members, they're pushing CRT and they're voting against us. What do we do? And I'm like, well, I would say right now, start speaking up. And just keep in mind that if you would have spoken up 2 years ago and got all your friends together and was active about this, it may have never happened in the first place.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, look, we're at the precipice now. I mean, it's I don't know if I hate hyperbole. I hate how the word Nazi gets thrown around a lot. It's very irritating because there are still people alive who went through that stuff, and I guarantee you they would not associate what they went through with anything that's happening right now.
On both sides, there are survivors accusing the other side of being the Nazis.
Yeah. I mean, it's what are we talking about here, man? I mean, we can't have a reasonable conversation. People have grown to the point where they think that their opinion about facts are themselves the facts.
Right.
So we're not even speaking the same language anymore. You say racist, and you mean something that you mean somebody that genuinely hates other people, and then somebody else says racist, and they mean a power structure that's been created over the last 400 years.
Yeah, but
that's a good point.
We're not even talking about the same thing.
No. You know, that's
a great point.
We talked about that years ago that the debate happening was words didn't mean the same thing.
Right.
And that we'd have to agree on common definitions. We're well past that point.
Oh, yeah. We're well
I don't know if we'll ever be truly past that.
No, no, no. We're past
that
point.
That's important. Always define racism, you know,
no,
if you're
going
to yell it out.
Ian,
it is,
but.
If you ask a progressive what racism is, they'll see it's a confluence between power and racial prejudice.
Okay. So in 2014, with all the Gamergate stuff happening, and then into 2015 as it escalated, 2016, we started seeing physical conflict with Trump. I was saying, based off of what tons of other YouTubers had already said, I'm like, clearly people aren't speaking the same language. When you're having this debate, the left is arguing racism means prejudice plus power, intersectionality, and the right is arguing it means discrimination on the basis of race.
Right.
The point we're at now in 2021 is that I can sit here and say, like, I'm pro-choice. And then have someone who's conservative say, I'm pro-life. And I'll say, okay, we understand what that means. Let's have a discussion on the ethics and morality of how this plays out in U.S. governance and what's the right thing to do. The left says, we will literally claim words mean something else just so that we can claim we won the debate.
Right.
It's not about not having the same definition. It's about them actively changing words on the fly on purpose. It's about Merriam-Webster changing the definition of the word racism, changing the definition of the word anti-vax, specifically
changing what the word immunity means.
Just so that people can win a political argument. Right. Yeah. They are actively trying to confuse you so that you don't understand what they're arguing.
Well, that's
they're
brave,
not arguing for
that's,
anything.
That's Brave New World, right? I mean, it's that and removing words.
Well, Brave New World was keeping people locked down by pleasures.
Not Brave New World. In 1984.
They
start removing words. So instead of good and bad, it's good and not good. Like, but it's one word, ungood or whatever they said. Nonsense,
you know,
right?
It's what is it? A brave new Fahrenheit 1984 for Vendetta.
I know. That's what we're living in, yeah. But it's what role do you think the fact that there's absolutely no tolerance at this point for anybody to be wrong at any point about anything? You know what I mean?
Like, you said you didn't like the word Nazi being thrown around.
Right.
Because it's like, you know, I think the challenge with the word Nazi is you say Nazi and then say, oh, well, why is it like the Nazi? You say fascist or communist or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they tried. Those were words that were specific to ideologies in the early 1900s in Europe and things like that. And yes, they had prominence in other places. But we need new words to describe what the left is. Authoritarian, yes, but it's something specific. Authoritarian, identitarian, communist. They're commie-Nazis. You know, the commie-Nazi fascists.
It's a little, I mean, because there's social programs sprinkled in there. But it's also very identity driven, and it's also very corporatist. So how do you define that?
Well, I mean that's Nazism.
They took all of the tenets of authoritarianism and kind of combined them into one. And
I was arguing with someone about this. It is what the left is today is very, very, very close to Nazism. Not the same thing, but what was Hitler doing? He was trying to steal back land he claimed was rightfully German. Oh, now you've got the left arguing. We just had a terrorist convicted for trying to derail trains to seize the land back for the indigenous. They're identity based. Okay. They're not the same when it comes to Nazis and like Aryan. They're very anti-white, but they're still identity based, authoritarian. They use fascistic ethos like there is no truth but power. There's a lot of similarities. So I suppose the issue is they'll always try and deflect by claiming you're the Nazi. When, you know, I love it. You have the Gadsden flag. Don't tread on me. Literally saying, leave me alone. And, you know, I'll leave you alone. Don't come near me.
That's what it meant, by
and,
the way.
And they have the flag of the fist, the communist fist squeezing the snake saying, we will tread. I'm like, you're the fascist.
It's amazing to think that this, because the Nazi party is a real political party. I think there's American Nazi Party, isn't there? There's like National Socialist American Party.
The National Socialist of America, the NSA, yeah, they were big in the 1930s, obviously. Or actually the 1920s. Yeah. It was big on the East Coast. Yeah,
so these people, their hatred for that has turned them into that which they hate.
How often does that happen, though?
No. It's pretty common. It's written about.
I think my opinion on this is that the current iteration of the establishment left and many of their, you know, more progressive and DSA type sycophants is just what happens when you get behavioral sink and cultural decay. Mm. What happens is...
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's just part of a system. This is a function of this kind of system.
I mean, it's just a fire.
There's only one way to turn, right? I mean, you turn to tribalism, and it's like the Stanton paper, the stages of genocide. Like how all that stuff progresses from let's see. I actually have it somewhere on here. Let me see.
Yeah, this probably happened for tens of thousands of
so
years.
So just to go through some of these quickly. Classification is the first one. People divided into them and us. I mean, come on, man. Symbolization when combined with hatred. symbols may be forced upon unwilling members of pariah groups, like the Star, the Nazis,
right.
Or like Maggot and all this stuff, or even
name-calling.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that because I don't want to get you flagged here. But discrimination happens, which is, you know, the what is it? What are we?
People already being fired.
We're referring to it now as the pandemic of the unvaccinated, even though there's no scientific basis for any of that nonsense, right?
It's Kamala Harris said in a tweet recently, I think it was today, we must protect the vaccinated, and I'm like, but they are
from
vaccinated.
Whom?
Right, I don't understand what that means.
So if protect the vaccinated from whom? They're vaccinated, so they're not talking about protect them from COVID, clearly. So
I don't know what it means.
But I think she did mean COVID, which is silly.
If she did, then she doesn't
know. No, you can't assume that.
But what the heck else?
That's the issue that you got to watch out for with con artists. Con artists use something called assumptive language.
Oh.
So they can say a thing to make you believe something without actually ever having lied.
But if you challenge them on it, they'll be like, well, I don't know. Right, I mean, they always backpedal when they do.
People don't.
The next one after that is dehumanization, like I don't know, deplorable.
Right.
That was just what an incredibly stupid thing to say. Actually, somebody it wasn't Rolling Stone, maybe it was the Daily Beast. Somebody ran a story a week or two ago, and it said Hillary's biggest mistake was calling people deplorables. But was she right, or something like that? Are you kidding me? Really, you're writing that right now? Are you trying to stoke conflict? I mean, obviously they are, but
yeah,
asking rhetorically. These dystopian novels were not a guidebook.
That
was a warning.
We went through the stages multiple times, and I think we've, like, in some instances, we stop at 2. There's like 10, right? 10 is like erasure of the genocide, 9 is genocide.
Right.
When it comes to the vaccine stuff, it's starting to feel like it's getting crazy because you have them saying plague rats. You have them saying, like, we must protect the vaccinated. It's very, they're literally classifying. They're literally talking about quarantine and things like that. And so it seems like that is the dangerous territory. But ultimately, what I was saying about what the modern iteration of the left is right now, I'm calling it fire. Mm. What I mean by that is an ignition started at some point, and there was no one willing to take responsibility to do anything to stop the fire or put it out. So it's been growing and growing. The bigger it grows, the harder it is to put it out. Eventually it becomes impossible to put out, and then it sweeps over everything. It is a chaotic and destructive force with no goals. The best example, one example I love using, is the word Womxn. Womxn. You ever hear this word?
No.
So there was an organization that said, we must respect all Womxn. And Womxn means the inclusive word for women. A bunch of feminists and leftists.
Oh, I see. It's like Latinx, but with X.
With an X.
Oh, my God.
So they started getting attacked saying, why do you need a different word for women? Are you acting like trans women aren't women and need a different word to include them? Simultaneously, the word woman and Womxn were both the offensive and inoffensive versions.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not possible for you to use the right word.
Right.
No matter what you use, someone would come after you for violating the tenets because there is no goal. There is no good. There is only we will destroy. Now let's do this. Let's jump over to our good friends in Australia.
Mm.
And let me clap back at the Australian.
I mean, it's getting wild over there.
So Australia is in the process of building more camps, which they already have several of. These are camps with relocatable cabins, they say, for quarantining people who are, as they say, when they're coming from abroad, they need to be placed into this camp, into a bungalow, to be kept safe so that they can't infect people with COVID.
Oh, be protected, I see.
And they have to wait there. Now, I referred to this as a concentration camp. Why? Because the word concentration camp doesn't literally mean Nazi death camp.
Right.
And there is some, you are trying to evoke an emotion by saying concentration camp. I did not choose those words lightly. I'm literally trying to point out what's happening. The government of Australia has built camps.
Mm-hmm.
They are putting people in those camps. They are claiming it's for safety. This is step one in the 100-step process towards locking up people, sealing them in, and then letting them die. Will it get to that point? Maybe not. No idea. But when has the government built camps with relocatable cabins for people deemed suspected of having a sickness to be locked away for a short period of time? When has that turned out well?
I want to just clarify, you're exactly right on the definition of concentration camp. It's a camp where large numbers of persons, such as whatever, political prisoners, whatever, are detained for the purposes of concentrating them in one place.
Exactly.
That's what that means. The death camps were a very specific type of concentration camp, not common.
Right. And so you're trying to evoke an emotion by calling it a concentration camp, obviously.
Sure, of course, yeah.
But quite literally, it's just when people are concentrated in one place, which is what they're doing. Now, as much as I typically don't like doing this, I'm going to actually just call out Quillette and Claire Lehman specifically, because I used to be a big fan, and now I think they are one of the most, they're one of the perfect examples, Quillette and Claire, of how you get the Nazis. So you look at Nazi Germany and people would say, like, how did it get so bad? Well, it's really simple. When the people who were claiming to be the intelligent dissidents started apologizing for the actions of the Nazis, any reasonable dissent was gone. And it's probably because they were scared of the state. They were scared of being included in as an undesirable or as unclean or being labeled. They were scared. Recently, we've seen with the opposition to critical race applied principles in schools, Claire Lehman of Quillette, Kathy Newmaning, James Lindsay, meaning she takes things he says greatly out of context to try and smear him, which is really weird because why would you do that? He's talking about American political issues and there's no reason to take what he's saying out of context. Recently, when I tweeted concentration camp in response to the camps they're building in Australia, Claire did a tweet saying that I called them death camps, which is, again, out of context or just hyperbolic, and then criticized me, which ended up now in The Australian, as I'm told, one of Murdoch's Australian papers. Now, in this article, she says, mocked we may be, but compare the death rates.
Oh.
This is Claire Lehman, Quillette, supposedly supposed to be classically liberal, challenging the wokeness and the establishment, defending the authoritarian practices of Australia. A video of a man being taken out of a hotel because there was a manhunt because he didn't quarantine and he was seen sneezing in an elevator. There's a video, and we have it, of a guy who they show up to his house with the police in full gear and he's confused as to what's happening. They said he's being taken to a hotel quarantine indefinitely. News 9 Australia saying this. When you have police showing up to people's homes and saying, we're going to quarantine you, then they say, we've built camps and we will build more camps. At what point do you say, I kind of don't trust the government doing this? Do you think that when the Nazis started building these camps, they went out and told the public what their intention was?
No.
Of course not.
Well, I mean, the presumption is, if you believe the stories that we read when the 101st Airborne first came upon one of these camps, that was the first that anybody, except for the people that lived nearby, that saw the ashes of bodies burning going by their homes. Like, those people in the villages knew, but then, like, people in Munich, they had no idea. Allegedly, anyways, right?
Well, so the propaganda is, you can look back at it, one of the famous bits of propaganda from the Nazis was that the Warsaw Ghetto, for instance, the Jews carried typhus. Mm. And for the sake of the health, you know, we needed to get in there and we need to do something about it. That's what they were doing. So they pull up in the trucks, they say, get on the train cart. And then when I see a video of a guy with the cops showing up and they're like, it's time for your indefinite quarantine, and he's like, all right, mate, I'm like, that guy did not learn a single thing from history. Now, I'll admit, it's a big challenge. What do you do when multiple cops show up, quarantine, ready to take you in? It's like, man, I'm not going to presume to be the arbiter of morality on this one to tell you what you should or shouldn't do, but I will say it's shocking for us, nonetheless, to watch a video out of Australia where a guy says, he apparently... Hey, let me jump to this this tweet. Now, I will admit, first and foremost, there's video. It says News 9 exclusive. Nothing comes up. People have been searching for this guy's name because, like, the search algorithms show you people are searching for this guy's name. Right. But nothing comes up from News 9, and I don't know the original source on this video. But this man says, you can see him, the cops show up to his house. They're wearing gear. He says he got a COVID test just for peace of mind. Never got alerted to what happened. Until one day the cops showed up saying he was positive and would be taken in for an indefinite quarantine. I don't know what happened to this guy or where he's ended up, but why would anyone look at that and say, that's fine, that's normal? Now, to throw it back to Quillette, Claire Lehman has written for The Australian, she briefly mentions me saying in the opening paragraph, the international media spotlight has been shining on Australia lately. And not in a good way. Last week, the left-leaning Atlantic magazine published an article that asked rhetorically if we were still a liberal democracy. No, Australia is not. That's me adding that in. She goes on to say, U.S. TV host Tucker Carlson told his audience of 3 million viewers Australia has descended into totalitarianism, which it has. And on social media, popular U.S. YouTube personality Tim Pool likened our quarantine facilities to concentration camps. They then show a statement from this guy, Josh Zepps of, he's an Australian broadcasting, broadcaster or whatever. He says, repurposing outback mining accommodation into international arrival bungalows is not the same as running a concentration camp. Literally by definition, it is. Concentration camps are bad because they brutalize political prisoners, not because they look ugly in aerial photos. This is what I said about the Kathy Newmaning. Now, to be fair, like I think we all know concentration camp evokes a kind of memory of what Nazi thing. Germany was doing. But I use that phrase specifically not to imply that Australia has been rounding people up and beating them and executing them, though I do think people there are being mistreated, as we've seen in some of the videos. But just listen to what he's saying. Repurposing outback mining accommodation into international arrival bungalows.
It's more than that. They're getting people from their houses as well. It's not just international.
Now, hold on. That video, they say hotel quarantine. It seems like that was before they had the camp set up and they were putting people in hotels. But here's my point on that.
Canada's doing that still, right?
The hotels.
The hotels,
right.
Yeah.
So this guy is, look, they built camps. They literally built camps to concentrate people. Right.
We were just talking. It was a huge conspiracy theory. The FEMA camp thing, right? That would never happen in the West. That would never happen here. Like, it's literally happening right now.
Well, so here's my point. This guy starts, you know, tweeting. You know, I love how absolutely pathetic Quillette has become. I mean that somewhat. I'm being sarcastic. It's sad. There was an event we did. I was at it in Milwaukee, and I met Claire, and I was excited. I'm like, Quillette does a great job. It's very rational, reasonable. It's anti-authoritarian. And now they are literally dropping to their knees and gagging on boot. When you have videos of a guy sneezing in an elevator and then a manhunt, and they find him, and they're dragging away in this full gear while people cheer for it. When you have a video of a guy being taken from his house for a hotel quarantine, it's not about whether or not they are actively putting those people in camps. It's about they've created camps to concentrate people as they come into the country. They're building more of them. The Brisbane, however you pronounce it, camp isn't expected to be finished until mid-2022.
Brisbane.
So what does that mean?
Brizzy.
They do not expect the pandemic to end until sometime after mid-2022, because I really doubt they're building a camp to just shut down immediately or not use at all. It's very likely they will use it like they're using these camps. If they're already willing to show up to someone's house and take them away for a quarantine, why wouldn't they eventually just say, well, we have these quarantine facilities. They're better than the hotels. It's cheaper for everybody. So we'll just put them in the bungalows. It's just a bungalow. What's the big deal?
Yeah, you're going to get pushback that they're not camps. You'll probably start hearing that. They're not camps, Tim.
Well, they're quarantine facilities.
That's literally my point. They're concentration facilities. Yeah. And it's the same thing.
And that's the point I'm making with what he said, except they call them relocatable cabins.
Sure, call them whatever.
No.
You concentrate.
A cabin. They're cabins.
Concentration cabins.
Well, no. The point is, campgrounds have cabins.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, this is all political messaging, though. How quickly did the phrase "kids in cages" switch to whatever the Obama or the Biden administration were calling them? And the circumstances were far worse. By the way, I don't know if you've seen. I'm sure you have. You've seen these pictures, right? Of the kids rolled
under
up.
Under the bridge?
Of kids rolled up in thermal blankets.
It was bad when it was under Trump, but at least Trump was actively saying, we got to end this.
Which, is, by the way, is the same thing that Hillary Clinton was saying as Secretary of State in 2013. Exactly that.
Right.
Do not come here.
And Bernie.
Yeah.
But let's I'm going to throw back to Australia and make this point. In the United States, we saw Black Lives Matter marching through the street, shoulder to shoulder, no masks. And the media said it was fine. They're not super spreader events because we say so. Sturgis happened, motorcycle rally, not even overtly political for the most. I mean, I'm sure there was politics there, but for the most part, it's a motorcycle rally, super spreader event. Protesters on the state capitol stairs, super spreader event. We get it. Obama can have his big birthday party and everything's fine, even though people did get sick. Black Lives Matter can protest and it's fine. What do you think is going to happen in Australia with these people protesting the quarantines? How long until the police say, well, this quarantine was a super spreader event, so we're going to start putting these people in quarantine for their own safety?
You're developing a mechanism for them to get retribution against people politically. Right?
And so this guy tweeted at me and said, when that starts happening, I'll admit I was wrong. And I'm like, and therein lies my point, that you would let it happen before you would do anything about it. And I would say, hey, don't let them do it. Quillette, you're cowards.
First they came for the socialists, and I wasn't a socialist, so I didn't say anything. Then they came for the trade unions, and I wasn't a trade unionist. Didn't say anything. So then they came for the Jews. I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't say anything. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to say anything. That's a very good poem.
Yep.
Man, it's And by the way, even the data she's talking about is nonsense. She's, look at our numbers. It's, we're lower than, if we had lost as many, the percentage of the United States did. Do you know how many, there's so many countries.
Sweden?
Forget about Sweden. Panama, Lithuania, Nepal, Libya, Botswana, Ireland, Switzerland, Georgia, Nigeria, the Republic of the Congo have lower case mortality rates than Australia. Are you kidding me?
To be fair, I'm sure that the people of Australia have never heard of Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we were fortunate enough to have Benjamin Franklin, who said, those that would sacrifice freedom for temporary security deserve neither and will lose both, or something to that effect.
Is COVID wrecking, like, third world? I don't like using that word, third world countries. How about it, or less industrially developed? Is COVID wrecking them, or is this an obesity crisis like in the first world?
There's two points to be made on third world countries or underdeveloped nations. One, there's not much data at all saying that there's large numbers of deaths. And if you look at a lot of the charts and everything, you'll see nothing happening. The second point is they don't have the infrastructure for tracking a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So countries with underdeveloped medical infrastructure aren't tracking anything.
I would also say some of the more, I mean, once the first wave rolled through there, there's no guarantee that a Delta variant would pop up independently in that place. And how many people are traveling to third world countries? You know what I mean?
Right.
So
less travel, less population density means less spread.
Which probably mean they reached the fact that they have less access, that they're more crowded together and have less access to modern medicine probably means they reached a higher percentage of natural immunity faster than any other place, right? You would think. So even when a new variant popped up, they would be more protected. I mean, everybody knows at this point that the COVID vaccine treats the spike protein, right? Primarily, right?
It triggers an immune response to the spike protein,
right? So, there's 28 other proteins on the COVID cell, right? So I'm telling you that red circle with all the stuff coming off of it that you're seeing in the news and stuff. Those are all little proteins, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The spike protein is the one that's being treated because that's the one that was causing us issues. The other 28 are treated to some degree by this because of the triggered response, but nowhere near as effective as natural immunity. And we see this in this Israeli study. It's 800,000 people.
You don't
get much bigger than that when it comes to a medical study.
Just as the human brain is greater than any computer we've ever built, I imagine our immune system is stronger than any medicine we could ever administer. I would imagine. I don't know, but I mean,
the most protected you could be is to have had COVID, survived it, and also been vaccinated.
Right.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. There's no question about that.
What are they calling that? The super immunity or whatever?
And in order to develop immunity, it's about consuming the right products, including vaccines and food and all these things. So it's not a black and white thing.
You know, I would push back on your immunity thing because there are diseases we could not treat or cure, but we could vaccinate against. Like if you get rabies, you die. If you get bit and we administer the vaccine fast enough.
Modern medicine's incredible. Not even modern, just medicine in general. Food.
But is that a prophylactic vaccine? No, we don't get a shot for that before. We get it.
Well, no. So the way the rabies works is that once you get bit, it has to go into your nerve cells.
Right.
When that happens, you're dead.
Right.
So if you get bit and you get the vaccine, it prevents the infection.
But that's not a prophylactic vaccine. Right?
No, that's a regular vaccine.
Yeah. So it's like.
And it's like six shots like every day. It was like every week for like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Wow.
In your stomach
or
something.
But it destroys rabies.
Yeah. It prevents. Right.
That's incredible.
I've grown pretty weary of everybody comparing this to polio and measles and smallpox.
Which are very, very serious.
Of course they are. I mean. Polio in children was about 2 to 5%, but the loss of limb or loss of use of your limbs was pretty bad.
Right.
When you reached adult age, it was somewhere between 15% and 30%. Measles somewhere between 10% and 15%. Smallpox 20%. These are nowhere close to 0.3%. Right?
People that died or people that caught it.
Mortality.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Wow. 20%.
So that's
apples and some fruit no one's ever heard of. If you're a fan of Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's fair to say that.
Something.
Well, pawpaws are great. We have a whole bunch of pawpaws.
Yeah, we do.
So I didn't realize. You know, I thought we only had a few, but we went. We have this like wooded area as part of the property, and they're everywhere. You step on them, you shake a tree and they just keep falling in the head. You're like, oh, there's too many of them.
What the hell is this? I feel like I'm in a sci-fi novel or something.
Right. Yeah, you ever see a pop? You've seen a pop-up before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Hillbilly Banana. Yeah. What were you just talking about?
Well,
about
enjoying this so much.
3%. So here's what I was going to say. I think it's fair to point out that early on we were like, hey, it's novel, so it's going to spread rapidly. Because
it's also going to mutate more quickly than we used to, right?
And the mortality is like, I think it's like, double the flu or whatever.
Right around there, yeah.
And so I'm like, I think it's a good reason to be worried about this. You know, it's not the same thing.
Well, if you're under 40 and healthy, then there's not a reason for you to worry about yourself. But you do have some responsibility to the people who are over 40, right?
Right.
Yeah, we do bear some responsibility for those around us in some way. Now, I don't bear a whole lot of responsibility for somebody who's been stuffing sugar and fat down their throat for the last 25 years.
Well, fat's okay. It's a sugar.
But when they're mixed, it's really good. Fat and sugar together.
Fat and sugar together are not great. But yeah, it's. I don't bear any responsibility for that. But I do understand, like, with some of the. I don't like being told what to do. And I think if this was a serious enough problem, people wouldn't need to be. That's the issue with liberty, right? If people typically trend towards taking care of one another.
Yeah.
Especially Americans. Nobody gives more money anywhere in the world than not the American government, the American citizen. Like when the storms happened in Indonesia, right? And they had the tsunamis and all that stuff. Nobody gave more money to the Indonesian people than the American citizen. Not the American taxpayer, right. The American citizen. And this stuff pops up all the time. We see these people in Afghanistan that need to get out. They're friends of ours. People are spending their own money to go over there without guns, by the way. These guys were operating without arms, going into hostile territory, grabbing people and getting them out. That is who people are, generally speaking. Let them be that. Let them be good. Let them be American, because that's what it means to be American in the first place. You're robbing them of the honor of being that thing, and of course they're going to turn. That's how it works.
I want to point out something going back to this Australian article that I think is important for critical thinkers. There's a certain amount of trust you can place in institutions based on the credibility that they have and the things they've done that you can track and then make your assessment. I typically have a hard time trusting a lot of the mainstream news outlets, but if I can fact check them, if I can find source material, I will. Sometimes you just blindly trust they're telling the truth. For instance, you know, one of the articles we used from KTLA earlier was just quoting a woman, and for all I know, they didn't actually quote the woman. I don't know. So we do have trust in these institutions. I just think it's kind of funny that if in this Australian article they say the data says that, you know, X amount of deaths in Australia and, you know, ABCD, if I'm criticizing your government for building camps in which they take human beings and place them, and then there's a video of a guy where he's like, you know, we're waiting to be fed. One woman was yelled at by the cops because she took her mask down to sip tea. If I'm criticizing your government for being authoritarian crackpots, and then you go, yes, but that same government told us that it's important and we should all do it. I'm like,
isn't that kind of like
that's
using
my point?
You're using a word in its own definition.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that doesn't make any sense.
If you're coming out and being like, the government did this thing, and then the government told us it worked. Yes, we investigated ourselves and found we did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
I'm all set on those explanations.
It's sad, right? I was talking to some people about, you know, where Quillette has gone recently, particularly with Claire, moderately prominent anti-SJW personality or anti-woke. Mm. Now she's just doing this whole crypto-woke thing.
Mm. What's that?
It's where they'll be like, I'm not woke, but your criticism of the woke is going too far. So what they do is
Weinstein gets into that a little bit.
Yeah, they create.
If you listen to his interview with
Eric or Brett,
with Eric, if you listen to his interview on Portal with Douglas Murray, who's one of my favorite authors, by the way, mm-hmm. He's a great author. He wrote what is it?
The Madness of Crowds. Yeah.
It's one of the best books I've ever read. If you haven't read The Madness of Crowds, I highly recommend
Very
it.
Good.
But that conversation, he's like, I don't really like. I understand where woke is coming from, and it's like, dude, you don't. I understand nuance in conversation, but you do not. What you were talking about earlier with the Germans and how people in positions of authority started becoming apologists, or at least passively so, for this nonsense.
Well, I disagree with them, but
yeah,
your criticism goes too far.
What that does is it arms people with it gives them permission to say, oh well,
right,
and go on about their day.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's just a camp.
Anytime you have to utter the phrase, it's not that bad, that's like a couple starting a new Facebook account with both their names in it. Somebody cheated, right? You know something is up here. Something has happened wrong, and now people are correcting for it. You don't make statements like that if it's good. And since when do we settle for it's not that bad?
Well, the crazy thing was this guy who was criticizing me tweeted, no one is being brought to these camps. And I'm like, then why did they build the camps? Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? There's people being brought there.
It's like a guy building a doomsday device. Don't worry, I'm never going to use this thing.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, we built camps. Nobody's being brought there. I mean, I guess maybe he's saying no one's going to Australian people's homes and picking them up to bring them there.
Yeah, well, there's video of that too, though. So when
to the hotels, yeah, at least. So the intent is there to bring people to camps.
When do people stop suspending their disbelief? I wonder. I mean, it's like that.
I gotta tell you, man.
That George Bernard Shaw thing. Once you open your eyes, you're responsible for what you're seeing, and that is a problem for a lot of people.
We had someone here, and then after the show ended, and we were like wrapping up and getting up to leave, they were like, you know, you really think there's going to be like some kind of civil war or something? And I was like, we're in it. It's happening.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I think everything will be back to normal. It'll calm down. And I'm like, what part of 1,000 people broke into the Capitol and fought with cops and stopped the Electoral College process, and there was a shootout in Portland numerous times, and the guy was shot in the chest twice, and there's been ongoing skirmishes, and the Capitol Police are being expanded nationwide to start tracking down maggots, and George W. Bush is comparing right-wing individuals in this country to the Taliban. Like, what part of all of that don't you understand?
I would even say there's a global civil corporate war. Like, it's a corporate... The corporations have been at war with the plebs since the 1600s, since the bankers wanted to just control the system or something. So,
well, I mean, it was before that, it was a war between the wardens and the king, right? It was like, you know, between King John and all the Robin Hood story. We all know this, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was the levels of aristocracy fighting against one another. Everybody else was illiterate and unarmed.
So that was King Richard's brother, John. Yeah, Richard left to go fight in the Crusades and left his brother in charge of this country. And correct. John is notably a terrible, terrible leader.
Correct.
Makes me think about Joe Biden. A lot of times when I think about Joe Biden, I think King John.
Buchanan.
One of the worst. And John just messed up the country horribly.
Badly, yeah. He did end up signing a document that gave rights to the wardens for the first time, but still not to common people. Sometime around the 16th, 17th century, actual normal people started getting rights. People like John Locke started talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Martin Luther started talking up from the religious side. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff started happening. Yeah, it's been going on for a while.
So what happens? People defeat the top, and then they get to the top, and then they stop fighting for the people below them? Is that the
They were never fighting for people below them.
No, and that's a big problem, too. One of my favorite quotes ever in the history of the world is from Martin Luther King Jr. He said, you have two hands for a reason. One to pull yourself up, and the other one to pull the next guy up with you.
Mm.
And if that is not the way we're intent on living our lives, we may as well just go back to fighting in caves and shit. You know,
it's really simple, Ian. You have someone who's looking around saying, why am I in this circumstance? And they decide to blame someone else. Or they decide, I can take from someone else. They can justify to themselves, look at all these other people in a similar circumstance. That's evidence that I am correct. Once they get stuff, they say, well, why didn't you do what I did when I fought to get my stuff? It's always for themselves. They just justify their plight or their justify their amoral actions by claiming they're fighting for something greater.
It's a fifth dimensional global corporate civil war.
Fifth dimensional?
Yeah, fifth dimensional warfare.
You mean fifth generational?
Yeah, I like calling it dimensional. Yeah, you're right. generational. Let's go with it. Yeah, it is both dimensional and generational, but it's a fifth generational corporate civil war globally.
Yeah, it's mass propaganda across the board.
I mean, I wanted to ask you about this while I was here. What do you think about who do you think, before I poison the well here, who do you think benefited most from our Afghan excursion over the past month? Right, China.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder, so they're going to get something like $150 billion in oil.
Lithium.
1.5 trillion in lithium, give or take, right? 1.5 to 3, who knows? It's somewhere in that range and not adjusted for inflation. So I hate to draw these weird connections and stuff because there's a lot of assumptions being made between A and B, but this whole Hunter Biden Burisma thing that was completely buried by the press, he's getting paid money by the Moscow mayor's wife, former wife.
And Joe Biden flew his son in Air Force 2 to China for $1 billion private equity deal.
And there's the big guy who is referenced in intelligence documents that's receiving some payout. The presumption is that it was Joe Biden. Everybody just kind of went on about their business.
Bob Ulinski said it was Biden.
Yeah. Is it possible? I guess it is just
Chinese collusion.
Is the president, I talked to Alex about this, Alex Jones, last week, And he goes, yeah, I think 100% that the presidency is compromised right now.
I agree.
If that's possible, then what the hell?
I agree. If you look at, this is well before Biden was president. We were investigating a lot of the stuff.
Right,
I covered the Burisma stuff to great deal. And boy, did the media try to cover that up. Politico had reporting. It's a funny article where it says, you know, Ukraine scrambles after, you know, trying to stop Trump or whatever.
Right.
And then it was based on there was some Ukrainian officials at an embassy were like leaking details on Manafort, which got him in trouble. And then it was a few years later that Politico reported that there was no Ukrainian collusion. It never happened. And I'm like, but Politico never retracted the first article. They just allow these two different authors to contradict each other. That's the state of the media. When you see the investigation by like Matt Taibbi into the Burisma stuff, the stuff I've covered from it, right. I'm like, before Biden was even elected, I'm like, this guy is dirty. You've got Politico reporting in their magazine, Biden Inc., about how Biden's family's wealth has tracked perfectly along his career. When he was put in charge of Iraq, his brother is awarded all these contracts for building in Iraq, and now he's a millionaire and things like that. Hunter Biden being flown in Air Force 2 to China. Right. And now you have everything that's going on. How was Afghanistan botched to the degree that it was botched? Sure is convenient for the people who did a private equity were negotiating a private equity deal. I don't know if that was actually confirmed as happening, but who knows? You can't trust them. So I just think it's awfully convenient. And you know, the problem is when it came to Trump and Russiagate, I was saying like, you know, I think we'll look into it, right? If it's true, it's true. If it's not, it's not. And we don't just throw away evidence. If we're seeing it, we try and dig deeper. I say the same thing now about Joe Biden. The only problem is the institutions were falling over themselves to go after Trump and will do everything in their power to defend Joe Biden.
Yeah. I mean, at what point in American history has a group of 700 former commissioned officers and intelligence operators signed a letter saying, get this guy out of office, who, by the way, had us in the best trade position with China we've been in since we started trade with China, and get in this bumbling buffoon that we have in now, who has these weird ties through his family to China. One of the leaders of that movement was, James Mattis. And almost after he resigned, he got brought on as a partner at the Cohen Group. The Cohen Group, William Cohen, another former Secretary of Defense, they have four offices. Two of them are in China. And one of the things that they do, the Cohen Group, is negotiate deals between American and Chinese companies. That's what they specialize in, right? So you have maybe the most popular Secretary of Defense ever until his little, you know, that whole resignation thing. A guy with immense power, a guy who is now hooked up with other former secretaries of defense. So you have the defense industry both on the private and public side, right? And you have a compromised presidency that completely botches the situation in Afghanistan, that turns over the largest amount of wealth ever given from one entity to another, ever.
I mean, Trump was the one who was trying to pull us out of Afghanistan.
Sure, and we should have pulled out of Afghanistan. I mean,
but the issue is, if
there's a better spot for us. It's easier. There's more lithium in Peru and Chile,
Alaska,
by a wide margin.
Alaska
as well, but if we wanted a partner country,
right,
where we could pay lower wages to get it mined, but those wages still mean something to those people, that's a good deal.
The point is, if Afghanistan's national government stood, it would have been much more difficult for China. And
a couple of
weeks before the fall of Kabul, the president called Joe Biden and said, we need air support. And Biden said, just lie, say everything's going well. So they knew how bad it was. They had evacuated Bagram in the middle of the night without telling the Afghan army, without telling the government. Now, that sounds like sabotage to me.
But it certainly does, yeah.
But we do got to go to Super Chats. So if you haven't already, smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends, and go to TimCast.com. Become a member. Support our work, and you'll get access to our exclusive members-only segments. We got a big update. We got a couple new members-only shows that are going to be coming up. One's called The Green Room, where in the early minutes when guests arrive and there's shenanigans going on and off-the-cuff conversations, we're actually going to put that up as members-only content. So as soon as the show ends, you'll get that, and then we'll have the full member segment coming up right afterwards. So just more and more stuff for you guys, and that's in development right now. And it should be relatively soon. And it'll be a lot of fun. The point of that show is basically you'll have someone say, you know, Alex Jones shows up. Instead of talking politics, someone might be talking to him about his brownie recipe or like his aunt's famous apple pie. Just like random, welcome to the green room, here's the house. So it's kind of vloggy, but you know, it's interesting conversations. We had, Andreas, who's a part of the vlog, talking to Steve Bannon about like quantum communism and technocracy and just, Bannon was like, this guy's a genius.
Yeah.
He's crazy though, but
yeah,
he's a smart guy.
Love that guy.
And so it's funny stuff. So definitely stay tuned for that. Be a member. And I also have news. We are tired of waiting to put on the live events. we've had an issue. There's just red tape. It's the government stuff running a business, and we've been like, we got to do this. But we're going to, there's a local venue. And I say local, it's a big area, so it's still a little far away, but we're going to be putting on an event. The capacity is probably, it's like between 200 and 400. I'm not entirely sure. And, again, we're going to make the announcement on the official date with RSVP. For members who give $25 or more, then the next day it'll go to all members, and then the next day it'll go to everyone. And for now, we're planning on it being a totally free event. Just it's going to be RSVP first because of limited capacity. And then we're going to notify people based on, you know, one of the things we've been planning to do is that if you're a member at $25 or more, you get advance notice for our event. So we'll try and stay true to that. We're going to stay true to that. And then, there'll be live music. We have, I believe we're confirmed on our stand-up comedy headliner and opening act, which you guys are going to be super excited for when we're ready to announce it. We need to confirm the date with the venue. Then we'll announce the idea for the show. Then we'll set up RSVP and do it in a staggered manner. And we got to figure out whether or not we're going to announce the venue at the very last minute. And that may be the case for obvious reasons, but, you know, just stay tuned because it'll be coming soon. I'm hoping the next few days to actually confirm with the venue on the dates, have everything locked in, and then we can put it up on the site for RSVP. So stay tuned. Let's read some super chats. Let's see. Crust. What does it say? Crustum Fab. Crustum? Small screen. I am a huge Dan Holloway fan. I also just got back from voting. This isn't over till it's over. Tomorrow is the last day. Go vote in that recall election. All right, let's see. Bradley Tunesi says, "Hey, Dan and Tim, love the show, guys. My question is, I hear that there will be a time to stand to tyranny all the time, but when and how do we go about that? Love the American party. Give a kiss to the doctor." So here's what I've been saying.
That's Dakota Meyer, by the way. Medal of Honor recipient. He's been pretending to be a doctor. He got an honorary doctorate from some school I've never heard of, nice. And he won't shut his mouth about it. And to be honest, I may have to enter him at some point. But anyways, that's a good question. People ask me that a lot.
Well, we're in fourth and fifth generational warfare, as we've been describing it.
It's a cold war, right? I mean, it's different.
No, it's not cold.
Well,
I disagree.
In the way that we would think about the Cold War that we refer to, we are in a cold war, but that wasn't a cold war either, right? It never was.
So,
I mean,
how
many conflicts have we had? Korea was a major one, but we had micro conflicts all over the world for 45, 50 years.
Exactly.
Limited war.
And so that's exactly what's happening now. It's the next generation. So you've got fights happening in the streets, people being shot. That stuff's been happening for years, and it seems to be spiking up and disappearing, and there's some events worse than others. I just say you've got to win hearts and minds, and you've got to be very strategic about how you do it. Violence does not win hearts and minds. Now, the mainstream media has defended Antifa and covered up for them. Recently, there was a story in the Post-Millennial about a far-left terrorist trying to, I forget what it's called, shunting a train track to derail the trains and cause crashes, and convicted. So, look, these people are still, like, it's possible that they get convicted, they get arrested. There's a lot of people. You've got to be persuasive, and you've got to build public support. And then, when the culture shifts, the courts follow. You think appointing judges is going to save you? Nope. The judges will just do what they think is popular with the mainstream for the most part. So, be persuasive, be resourceful, be peaceful.
I think we're in a cultural insurgency right now. So, if you look at the stages of insurgency, the first thing you do is gain awareness, right? Well, you form your insurgency, then you gain awareness. Like, hey, here we are. And it's like that, if you've ever read the marketing book Traction, it almost follows the same pathway of a startup company. So you gain awareness first, then the second thing you do is gain patronage. This is where I feel like the Occupy movement got it right for a little while and then fell off because you can't gain patronage through violence, and you can't gain patronage by standing in the middle of the road. People that want to support you now will not because you've...
Right.
You've done stupid thing. If you were doing something that they thought was important and it inconvenienced them, they would probably join you, to be honest. But they would at least understand. If you do something that's completely irrelevant to the problem, blocking traffic and sleeping outdoors is not protesting. That's not
and
what it is.
People like to talk about Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. And Martin Luther King Jr., peaceful, persuasive, resourceful, even at a time of escalated violence. And then years later, you get the Weather Underground. And this guy is an American hero, an American icon. So you got to be smart about how you do it. Times are changing, you know. Here we go. We got Pad Dash. "Hey, Tim, I loved watching your latest Cast Castle vlog and your reaction to the custom desk mat I made for you. was priceless. If you want to make a rainbow Don't Tread on Me desk mat for your new studio, you know where to make it. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Pad Dash. We got this. Chicken Party with Tim Pool anime opening for our vlog, which is a bunch of art on it. It was really, really cool. And, yeah, man, absolutely. Thank you very much. I love the rainbow Don't Tread on Me flag because it's the ultimate, like, I'm going to do what I want. So I think that's really funny. Plus, it's funny because there's a news article where it showed a guy in Santa Monica protesting mandates, and he was holding a rainbow Gadsden flag. And I'm like, I think people who are into Don't Tread on Me are going to be like, right on. Like, because it doesn't matter what color the flag is, as long as you're saying, leave me alone and I'll leave you alone. But boy, the left did not like it.
Right.
They're like, why is that white supremacy on our flag?
Oh, yeah. That's, oh, man. Good Lord. Whatever.
All right. Turk Longwell says, Tim, now we know the secret to your success, not hard work, experience, or occupy. It was small town casino slots and gambling. Shout out to the cast team. So for those that aren't familiar.
Hey, if it's dumb and it works, is it really dumb?
So I'm really good at gambling for some reason. And we went to, they have these hot spots in West Virginia all over the place where you can just, like, bars have slot machines.
Oh, yeah.
And I won two jackpots. I went in with $60, walked out with $400.
But how can you can't say you're good at that? That's kind of coincidence, right?
Nope.
I was going to say that, I'm good but now it. I'm thinking of, like, the magnetic fields. And they're running through you, so you might be connected to some.
No, you're you're missing it, and you're overthinking it, Ian. These games are all programmed. Programming can't be random. It's that simple. So if someone is trying to determine a specific outcome in that this machine must pay out 98% of all money it takes in, meaning for every dollar that comes in, 98 cents goes out. These hotspots and casinos know for a fact that slots can't pay out more than they take in. That means someone programmed them. That means that program, you can understand how these slots
you
work.
You don't think you can program a random number generator?
You can do it using static. But these have to have a predetermined outcome, which means they can't
be random. Right. They have to pay out less than they make.
Yes, which means it can't be random. It has to be algorithmic. And if that's the case, it's actually quite simple. Most slot machines operate on very, very similar algorithms because they have controlled payout. And if you know how to do that, you end up with vlogs back to back where I win four jackpots in 20 minutes in 2 days.
Do you have x-ray vision? You see that they're filled and you know that they're going to start paying out?
It's, you know, people think counting cards is a really complicated process and it's ridiculously simple. Literally simple. You're like a face card. One, you know, not a face card. I'll do nothing. It's like just Google it.
You're
easy. It's super easy. And then when the count is high, it changes your strategy. They know when you're doing it, though. So in like Vegas, they get mad about it. I think in Atlantic City, you're allowed to do it. And all it does is it increases your odds to slightly above 50%. So you're working, but you might be making, I think they say like $20 to $50 an hour.
I mean, look, professional sports gamblers, and these are people not in decks of cards or on roulette tables or in places where there are a lot more. I mean, look, there's a lot of variables in sports gambling, but if you look at the way Vegas handicaps, they are within 1 point or so of their spread almost always.
Right.
But professional gamblers still only win about 55 to 58% of their bets.
And that's enough.
Yeah, it's enough. Certainly enough, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, there was a story I saw a long time ago about a guy who solved lottery tickets, scratchers, because a lot of the scratchers would have numbers on the front that you'd scratch off and reveal a symbol. And he said, if the outcome needs to be controlled, it cannot be random.
Right.
In which case, you can figure out the algorithm and know which number correlates with which symbol. He solved it. He then started looking at lottery tickets and he could pick the winners and losers.
Oh my God.
And then he filled an envelope with two envelopes. One said winners, one said losers. He was trying to tell the lottery commission, this is in Canada, and they were ignoring him because he's a crackpot with a conspiracy. Finally, they opened it up and found out he was right. The same is true for slot machines. They are programs. They are games. I'll tell you this. It is ridiculously easy to guarantee a jackpot on a slot machine.
Do you have a secret you don't want to give away? I don't advise giving away your secret.
I'm not going to give it away.
Yeah, that's cool, though.
But I'll tell you this. We didn't didn't even mention this because it's not in the vlog, but when we were in West Virginia, Central West Virginia, I won three jackpots in one night.
Mm.
And jackpots there, a couple $100.
Right.
Then we went to the casino on Sunday. Was it Sunday or was it Saturday? I think it was Saturday. And I won a jackpot. They actually gave me a tax form. I have to pay taxes on the winnings. So like when I won the jackpot, they're like, okay, got to fill this out. And then just the other day, we went to a pool hall where I won two more jackpots. I have the videos on my phone. I'll put it up on Instagram. And I'm not kidding. One, two more jackpots. I know exactly how these things work. So you got to look deep. You got to understand how the system works. Like I said, one of the only ways to get true random is through like background static. It's not super easy to do.
Mm.
Yeah. We should read Super Jets. Yes, but now everyone's like, how does he do it?
Yeah, I'm thinking if it's like you look at the way they've spun and the way they've landed, you can see that they've spun X amount of times.
You're overthinking it.
Yeah.
You're overthinking
it. That's how I work.
Yeah, so in the span of, it was last Sunday. Wow, it was last Sunday I went to the hotspot and won three jackpots. Then it was 1 week, less than a week later, I won another jackpot on a bigger machine. And then it was Sunday, I won two more. So, like, within 7 days, I won, what is that, 7 jackpots?
Well, I am pumped to find out how.
I filmed all of it, too. We didn't put all of the jackpots in the vlog, either.
Too many jackpots.
But I've got two more I could put up on Instagram and show you. All right, let's see. Actually, I think I got three. I don't know. I lost track. All right. Born Stellar says, buddy, you are completely wrong. I'm a Marine. 80% of us would never shoot an American. Sir, you're incorrect. I only got one word to say to prove that wrong. Antifa. If you saw a group of Antifa armed with handguns and ARs and they were running through the streets and firing, yeah, a lot of people, a cop would shoot them.
So what are you saying? You're saying if you oppose them ideologically, then you would shoot them?
I'm saying not necessarily that. I'm saying if you were deployed, you know, for whatever reason, or something like you're at a military base and then some chaos happens,
right.
And then so it's not that it's a violation of posse comitatus or anything like that.
Right.
But if you saw a group that it doesn't matter who they were and they were armed and they were engaging in combat, you'd probably neutralize them.
I mean, yeah, I would do that right now as a civilian, though.
Exactly.
That's not.
Well, so here's the issue.
It's different when you're, like you said, with posse comitatus, obviously, but just generally speaking, there's a different weight to that decision when you're wearing a uniform.
What is posse comitatus?
It means that you can't use military as police, basically.
They can't enforce domestic laws.
Yeah.
Unless only in extreme circumstances.
Can they be put under the authority of a local police station?
I don't think local police stations, but federal law enforcement, yes.
I think that's what
the Sicario movie is about.
I think with the Insurrection Act, they can. You need to invoke the Insurrection Act.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, the question is, people assume when a commanding officer says, shoot that American, they'd be like looking at this like granny waving a Trump flag.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like that. It's going to be a dude in a vest. And he's gonna have a weapon.
Well, here you are, though. We're having that conversation we were talking about earlier where we're talking about two different definitions of things, right?
Well,
so this Marine is probably talking about, I'm not going to march into a U.S. city and start rounding people up. And he's right. They wouldn't do that. I sincerely believe they wouldn't. I know these people, and I've been in that position. There's no way. But in a small-armed conflict.
I disagree. Yeah,
in a small-armed conflict, for sure.
I think the police
would be more likely to do that than military people.
In order for the military to ever get involved in any kind of conflict like that, it would have to have gotten so bad, where it's like there's bombings and cities are, you know, stripped to the point where they're like, Insurrection Act has been declared. And then the military is going to be told, look, we've got insurgent extremists. They're armed with pipe bombs, explosives.
Right.
We don't want to shoot them, but you need to protect yourself first and foremost. When you're given that intelligence, do you question your commanding officer? Do you say you're wrong, you're lying? No, you trust them.
No,
right?
no.
You don't trust your
absolutely not. No, like, so, I was taught, and I taught my people to never just trust anything like that at face value. The more extreme, it's I can't remember how the phrase goes, but it's something. If you're asserting something, that's the stronger your assertion is, the stronger your evidence must be, right? Something to that effect, and that is absolutely the case. Well, now that's not the case for everyone, obviously.
Right. So my question to that is, why did a family get hit by a drone strike in Afghanistan?
Because that drone strike happened from an Air Force base called Creech, just north of Las Vegas, right? In North Las Vegas, actually, it happened 8,000 miles away from that location, and to the operator, the drone operator, that's just a little. It's tops of heads. That's why.
So the issue, I suppose, is.
But you see, what's that movie? Or it's a TV series. I think it's the second season of Jack Ryan, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it's the first season of Jack Ryan, the new series that was on Amazon Prime.
The dude from The Office.
Yeah, where the drone operator kills the wrong person or something like that, or they had bad intel, and then it's part of the story. I would imagine that that's probably a difficult thing to do. I don't know if I could be a drone operator.
Oh, that'd be so hard.
It's a lot easier to walk up to somebody, see that they're a threat, and then put a bullet in their brain than it is to drop a bomb on somebody and not know by the time the bomb hits the ground, are they going to be standing there, or is it somebody's kid? Like that Anwar al-Awlaki, the first time we tried to kill him, we killed his kid, right?
No. That was we were going after – he was already dead. Abdurrahman was killed after, I'm pretty sure, after Anwar, and he was in Yemen at a
– No, Anwar's child. The first time we tried to kill him – well, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't his child, but children died the first time we did it.
Yeah, Abdurrahman was killed, I think, after the fact. And Obama claimed that they were trying to target a different, you know, al-Qaeda terrorist, and it was an accident. They blew up a civilian restaurant. Yeah.
Well, it was somebody's wedding, I believe. The first strike, right?
Oh, the first strike. Yeah.
I wonder if it's like if we didn't have this Patriot Act thing where we can say anyone's a terrorist at any time and then we can drone strike them at any time, that the government or the people in power feel like they wouldn't have enough power if they didn't have that ability, that they would be destroyed.
Well, let's agree to disagree for the most part, but I would say I think if there was a group of Antifa flying Antifa flags and they were armed and they were shooting,
I mean, look,
a lot of people would shoot them.
To be honest, right now I would do that. So,
like if they were shooting at people, you'd stop them.
Yeah, if I saw anybody conducting a shooting like that and they weren't clearly uniformed, which is to say I know that they're doing that on for some reason, that would make me hesitate and ask why they're doing it. But if I just saw that happening, I would smoke that person.
So I think it's fair to say, like, when someone just abruptly is like, I would never shoot an American, it's like, no, yeah, you would.
Right. You know. Americans get shot by other Americans all the time.
Right. All right. The one free man says, read Ordinary Men, a book of how normal men become cold-blooded murderers in Poland during World War II. Don't think you would never do horrible things. Yep. Instead, think what it would take for you to do horrible things. One-third were Nazi informants in World War II. Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, like, at what point do I stand up to tyranny? And it's like, honestly, I think you're peaceful. Obviously, there's a threshold, right? If we got to the point of actual death camps and, like, you know, Gestapo-type police
then
beating
you're in a,
children in
you're
the street.
You're in a hot war at that point.
Right, exactly, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Everybody like, knows what the rules are. But, like, with the... I've actually found it pretty interesting to hear the whole Rittenhouse debate play out over the last 2 years or so, because people, even on the right, have different opinions about stuff. The left obviously outright condemns it because they disagree with him politically, I guess. I don't know what their basis is. I mean, apparently getting, despite what the law says about having a blunt object swung at your head and your ability to defend yourself when that happens, or somebody trying to shoot you with a Glock, but maybe the circumstance that brought him there. I think he's a really interesting case because this is a kid who was, by and large, there to do the right thing. He was trying to clean up, put out fires. He was there to do the right thing. And then stuff went a little wild. Maybe he was a little out of his depth. But I don't think anything – it is very upsetting to me that he got charged with murder in the first place. And if he gets convicted of this, that would be one of the biggest miscarriages of justice, I think, in modern history.
I think it'll happen.
It may.
Oh, definitely.
It may. There's a lot of activists in the DAs these days.
That's the problem.
Well, it's not that. I mean, when Chauvin's trial can be surrounded by fences and men with machine guns because there's active rioting in the city, and then they're like, we will not change locations.
And he didn't get a mistrial for that. Right. How do you, if that's not a mistrial, then one doesn't exist.
And so it was a really great point. I think it was Will Chamberlain said this, and if it wasn't, I forgive whoever did, that when the judge said, everyone in the state knows what happened, who this guy is, so there's no other venue in which we could have a more fair trial. Mm. At that point, you say, charges dropped, have a nice day. Yep. If you cannot have a fair trial, you're free to go.
Right. I mean, what
not the other
the,
way around.
What are the chances that Rittenhouse is going to get anything approaching a fair trial, despite the fact that a pedophile armed with a weapon he wasn't supposed to have tried to shoot him, and that guy
that guy tried taking his gun from him.
Well, one guy had a Glock, right? Oh, that was the guy.
The
first guy was the pedophile then.
Rittenhouse was being chased by the pedo guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some other guy fired at Rittenhouse, who then heard the shot, turned around, and when he did, I think his name was Rosenbaum, reached for the gun and missed, and then Kyle fired and fired and fired.
Okay, well, look, if I'm carrying a weapon and you are a much larger person, there's case law on this with women, by the way.
No, the guy was smaller than him.
Well, it doesn't matter. He's an adult.
He's
a 17-year-old kid.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a case law of this where women have pulled out weapons to defend themselves. The man tried to take it away, and he was unarmed, but she shot him. Perfectly fine to do that, by the way. If you're
It's political.
The presumption is if I have a weapon and you're trying to take it from me, you're going to take it from me and use it on me, right?
Yeah,
you're not taking it on me to disarm me and then go home after you've been violently chasing me down the street. So he was right to shoot that guy. He was right to shoot both.
And then he was chased and he was trying to get to the cops.
And the guy was trying to hit him with a skateboard in the back of the head. He shot that guy. And then the other guy got his bicycle.
Well, no. So what happened was he got shoved to the ground.
Right.
And then the guy with the skateboard tried grabbing the gun. Mm. And when he reached for the gun and missed, Rittenhouse fired up and went into his heart.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy then approached with his Glock and went to grab the gun. And then Rittenhouse pointed at him. The guy backed up and put his hands up. And then he lunged again and Rittenhouse shot him and it blew off his bicep.
So it sounds like the kid's a lot better at fighting than these other turrets.
And that guy with the gun later said, it's been a long time since we reported this, so fact check me on this one. I may be wrong, but
Bicep guy, you mean?
The bicep guy, I'm pretty sure he said, I should have just, you know, wiped him out.
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
Mm. Yeah,
I should have like just what? Wiped
like, him? I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, I should have just unloaded into him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, look, if you're on your heels, well, I mean, he's literally on his back firing the weapon. At that point, you have no right to walk up and just start shooting the kid. Am I off on that? Like, I feel like the how he was there in the first place, there might be some questions about for his mother. Like, why is your 17-year-old...
But that's a personal...
In the middle... Issue. Yeah, exactly. That has nothing to do with me. And you can't... Just because somebody ended up in a situation because of whatever, all that's in the past. Who cares? What happened once people started taking responsibility for their own actions, right? You saw what happened. Like, these are criminals. One guy was a pedophile. The other guy that had the Glock was a felon. He shouldn't have had the gun in the first place, right? So what are we talking about here? I never understood why there was such a debate over this. He's become an effigy for this political fight.
I've made some crazy bets. I've dropped a bunch of money down on roulette wheel to see what would happen. And sometimes I lose, sometimes you win, you know?
Mm.
I've put a bunch of crazy money in slot machines and tend to win. If I had to make a bet right now, I'm not saying it's a guaranteed victory. Like I'd put $100 down and win $100 and be like, I did it. I'd be willing to bet that he gets life. I think I would, if I was like on a roulette wheel and I was trying to figure out like what's a good odds for winning, I'd be like, oh yeah, life in prison.
What if you didn't have to make a bet on this?
What do you mean?
You said if I have to make a bet, I would bet that life in prison. But if you didn't have to make a bet, would you make a bet?
60% chance he gets life.
So if you had to make a bet, would you? Or if you didn't have to make a bet, would you? Is my point. Like,
yes,
is,
that's my point.
You think it's actually that good of odds that you would risk?
Yes.
Wow. I don't know.
That's
man.
My point.
I don't know because I agree. This is like,
bro, they had machine guns and barricades outside of the Chauvin trial. And they had
and
riots
were
in
still,
the city. And the jurors said, I was scared of retaliation. Yeah.
It was like a hockey game. They're like banging on the glass. Like, oh, are you kidding me? How is that?
Dude, well, I mean,
but what, two or three?
Cowards of Kenosha are going to cry and beg Antifa to spare them.
Oh, yeah. 2 or 3 months before that, though, a federal courthouse is getting attacked. A police station gets burned to the ground. And what happens? Nothing. Literally, Antifa set up an autonomous zone. They took over by force an area of a major U.S. city for a month. And how many people have been arrested because of that?
I don't know.
I mean, Nadler refused to admit that Antifa even existed. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How do you fight an enemy that no one will agree even exists? That's something that we're going to have to figure out.
I don't think anyone in
soon.
Politics mentioned Antifa until that political debate with Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing Trump definitely always got right. He never let anybody slip by. Like, if there was something to be said, if there was an elephant in the room, he's like, hey, elephant, elephant.
Oh, yeah, Antifa. Trump did talk about
him.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. People are talking about rabies vaccines.
Oh, yeah.
Rose M says, nah, bro, I've had the rabies vaccine series. It's only 3 shots over about a month. Not bad. They hurt less than flu shots.
Oh, cool.
I hear that.
I wonder if that's like an updated version.
I'm pretty
version.
Sure it is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it used to be way worse, and they've been improving on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Smart audience.
The licensed guru says, love how happy Ian is today. Good vibes from everyone.
All right. Yeah. I watched some of the live chat going through. It's funny how much people roast you.
It's awesome.
it's really, I really enjoy when people do that. It upsets me sometimes when my friends get attacked. I don't know what that is about me, but when people come after me, as long as it's funny,
yeah,
that makes my, sometimes I'll just sit there. You remember the mean tweets thing? That used to be a thing on late night television.
Yeah.
Where people had fun reading mean tweets about themselves. Now you get banned.
I have so much love for you. typing these things. Thank you. Keep it coming.
The tactician musician says, nothing irritates me more than the president of the U.S. saying, it's not about freedom, it's about safety. America is freedom. How many people risk life for freedom in the wars? How many people are risking life right now traveling through Mexico? And how many people are taking risks by just like walking through the forest when there could be a big cat or a bear or something? You choose to take those risks. That's on you. Mm. All right. Burad is challenging me, and I think I might fail. Dude, she sells seashells by the seashore. Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat. Nailed it.
Nice work,
nice.
Dude. You practiced that when you were a kid.
Some wingnut says, what are your feelings on Joe Rogan being able to perform in New York City without being vaxxed? Is Joe, he's doing the Madison Square Garden?
Joe Rogan? Really? So he's going to, I guess he's certainly not vaccinated.
I don't know if he's ever said whether he was or wasn't. It was reported that he wasn't.
He said that he wasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. But so not only Madison Square Garden has its own rule about vaccination, but now New York City has gone into effect as well, right? So
performers are exempted.
I mean, it was like Chappelle used to talk about that a lot with the cigarette thing. He could smoke on stage, but you couldn't.
Yep.
It was a part of his performance.
Maybe. I got to say, if...
maybe we should just all become stand-up comedians.
Well, yeah. This is a big one. If I know Joe. I talk to Joe every so often. I have mad respect for the guy. But I do have to point this out. If Joe is going to go on his show and, you know, be critical of vaccines to whatever extent, and he's going to, you know, be talking with, like, Brett Weinstein and talking about these things, if he's going to oppose mandatory vaccinations, but then create a circumstance as a performer in New York which would result in thousands of people who want to see him getting vaccinated or at least upholding the mandate system.
Right.
I got to say, I don't know. Is that hypocritical?
Yeah, a little bit.
I think you got to criticize it.
I bet if you put it to him that way, he would probably agree with it, though, to be honest. He probably just hasn't considered that yet because there is some responsibility when you get when you have an audience and weight like that. He will make Madison Square Garden probably $3 to $5 million just in ticket sales that night, and then you can add about multiply that times 1.6 or so for all the concessions.
It's basically standing in line to defend the vaccine mandate.
Essentially, yeah. But so I've had a number of friends who are performers of varying degrees of celebrity say, I'm not going to perform there because they have a vaccine mandate. I'm not going to subject my fans to that. But I've seen people, none that I know, but people from the other side do the same thing. Say, I'm not going to a place that doesn't require vaccination, right?
You know, this challenge is a lot of money, you know? But I guess I would look at it this way. What does Joe do with his money in a way that benefits freedom and challenges the things that he opposes? Honestly, I don't know. I mean, he probably donates.
Or he's starting a comedy club. I know that.
Maybe he donates. I'm not trying to accuse him of not doing or doing anything. I'm just saying, here's the factors. If they pay him, if he ends up getting paid millions of dollars, and then he says, I'm gonna take this money and I'm gonna put it into legal work to sue the hell out of New York City to end this, I'd be like, dude,
it would be
now
pretty
you're taking the money from the system to throw it back in their faces. If he just says, well, you know what? People can do whatever they want. I think vaccine mandates are bad, but if they want to get vaccinated, it's on them. I'll do the show. Then you're propping up the system you claim to oppose. So I guess the ultimate issue is here. I don't know if he's doing the show. I don't know what's going on with it. Hmm. I don't know.
They're selling tickets October 2nd, 2021, Madison Square Garden. If you go to the Ticketmaster page, it pops up a COVID health check required. In order to attend the event, all guests age 12 and older must provide proof of COVID-19.
Speaking of that,
were me, I would say event canceled. Yeah, or I'd move.
That's
I'd
what
move
Jim
it.
Brewer's doing.
Yeah,
Brewer, yeah, I'd move yeah. it. I just move it.
Brewer canceled.
I wonder if there's going to be anybody. When's the first federal lawsuit going to come in the form of the same one from the George Mason University professor that said that his natural immunity should take the place of a vaccine? Right.
What if
he won that case in federal court? Yeah. By the way,
what if your doctor says you can't get the vaccine?
Right.
And then I mean, New York says there's no exemption. Too bad.
If your doctor says you can't get the vaccine, then they can't not exempt you because the ADA prevents them from doing that.
But they're doing it anyway.
Right.
So, I called 25 restaurants.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that kind of begs the question, why do we have gun laws if they don't actually, if words on paper don't actually stop anything? If it doesn't stop the government from telling me what I can and can't do, where I can and can't go, then what is the point of any of that stuff?
Exactly. So many people are feeling that right now. Right. What is the point?
But that's a good thing, though. I think it's a good thing for people to realize that the system they're in isn't what they thought it was, that these words on paper mean nothing. Phil Jackson used to say, that you're only a success in the moment that you perform a successful act. Hmm. That's a very, very good quote. And I would add to that, you're only kind in the moment that you perform a kind act. You're only a patriot in the moment you perform a patriotic act, because it puts the onus back on you to not just say things, not just read words on paper, but to live that life.
You know, I think it was Breitbart who said politics is downstream from culture.
Yep. Right.
I think there's a better way to say it. Politics is irrelevant. Fight for culture. Mm. Because in New York City, you have, I called one of the restaurants, you know, I called a bunch of the restaurants, and one of them, I asked him, you know, would you, you know, hey, we, you know, if I came in, would you deny my friend access because they can't get the vaccine? The doctor won't let them.
Right.
And they said, yes, they can't come in. And then I said, you can eat outside. I'm like, but we don't want to eat outside. That's like segregation. It's like discriminatory. Like the doctor's not allowing my friend to get the vaccine. And they said, I'm sorry. Those are the rules. We're just following with the, you know, the mayor's orders. And then I said, well, this violates the Americans with Disabilities Act and New York City human rights law about discriminating based on the basis of medical conditions.
Right.
And then someone else picked up the phone and went bye. And then
he was like, it's Project Veritas. Hang it up.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I say, like, people seem to think that they're so, oh, I would always stand up and I would, dude, the people of New York City have buckled in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And all of your precious laws, you've got New York City, you've got New York State and federal anti-discrimination laws gone. Why? Because the fascists of New York are willing to drop to their knee to gag on boot the moment de Blasio says so. And so long as the people are going to grovel before de Blasio, your paper means nothing. You'll right. stand there being like, but I have a constitution saying, and he's going to be like, look at all of my subjects around me.
You could totally.
And then he'll say, subjects rise, beat him. And they'll say, yes, master.
Yeah, that constitution is only as strong as the fist and gun behind it.
Right? Yeah.
That's why the Second Amendment exists. It wasn't to protect us from a foreign army. Do people still believe that nonsense?
It partially. I mean, I think it was, so the reason the original Second Amendment was actually, I think it was the fourth, and it was long.
Right.
And it said, regardless of whether or not it had a provision that said, regardless of military service, you are entitled to keep and bear arms. They removed it because they were worried it would be used as an argument to stop conscription.
Right.
So the purpose of the Second Amendment was foreign and domestic. That internally terrorism, tyranny, or externally war, an armed population keeps it safe.
This COVID could be the shock to the system that inoculates us against this stupid creep of totalitarianism, because our rights are not set in stone. They only exist when we enforce them by enacting them.
Look at Australia, bro.
Look at it. That could be us. It's not right now, and it won't be if we choose it not to be.
Well, we're heading that direction.
Well, that's a dangerous thing to say, because you can't speak for everyone like that.
We will see how it goes, but we're going to have a members-only segment coming up on timcast.com, so become a member. Go to timcast.com, subscribe. Make sure you like the video right now. Like this podcast. Share it with your friends. Subscribe to this channel. And you can follow us at Timcast IRL, basically everywhere, or some places like Timcast_IRL. You can follow me personally and watch me engage in shenanigans at Timcast, and I'll post those videos of me winning the jackpots to back up my claims that, yes, I win them all the time, at Timcast on Instagram and other places.
I'm going to find out where you're doing it, and I'm going to just wait outside and rob you every time you win the jackpot.
That's a good story. I mean, it's a couple hundred bucks.
Like, going to the hotspots, and you're my hotspot. I'm just going to follow you around and rob you every time. Perfect. I need a different series of masks. Maybe you can help me with that.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's West Virginia. In West Virginia, I ain't worried about it.
That's true.
Constitutional
carry. Well, Texas just passed that, too, finally.
Yes.
Right?
You can walk around West Virginia with, like, a Barrett M82. I don't know why you'd want to. It's very heavy.
Yeah, it's bulky, yeah. It's bulky, yeah.
Did you want to shout anything out?
You can just follow me on Instagram at Dan Holloway. I do a lot of weird stuff over there. A lot of my posts get deleted for various reasons.
Oh, nice.
Right on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, everyone. Great to see you, man.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you again. Ian Crossland. Follow me at iancrossland.net or anywhere at Ian Crossland exists.
And I was going to say, I'm surprised Dan didn't shout out his podcast, which is Drinking Bros.
Well, it's on my hat.
So that's a podcast. I've been listening to it. I've been really enjoying it. I've been talking about Afghanistan.
I also want to shout out The Quartering. He's in here. Do you know that guy?
No, of course.
He gave me some heat one time for some stupid things I said, and they were definitely stupid. We can get to that on the members only part.
Yeah, Jeremy's cool, dude.
As we were sitting here, I was like, I feel like you have the cadence of Jeremy. And that went through my head a couple times during the show.
We both have beards, so maybe that's
probably it. Yeah,
it like weighs your face down a certain amount. I don't know.
And you guys should follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids, because I want more followers than Sour Patch Kids. That's all I want.
We will see you all at timcast.com for the member segment. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.